desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's many time zones and geographic locations. I'm Art Bell, and filling in for George Norrie. George, I want to thank you for allowing me to sit in the seat tonight. And, of course, Premier Radio. George takes a little break tonight. Well-deserved break, night after night. I can tell you because I know it's a lot of work. Anyway, it's great to have the opportunity to jump into the seat before it rusts along with me. And it's just great to be here. I can't, you know me in radio, right? Bell News, what's new with us? Let me see. Not much. Ramona and the four fur-packed felines continue to be just spiffy. Everything here is fine. That is except for the flooding. Now, I'm sure a lot of you have seen the pictures of Las Vegas inundated. We are 65 miles to the west of Las Vegas, and let me tell you, this summer has been a weather terror in the American Southwest. Well, actually, all over the world, not just the country, but the world. My little corner of it here in the southwest part of the country, though, oh, my gosh, the storms we've had. You wouldn't believe the storms we've had. Every single day, thunderstorms rolling in. Now, you've got to remember that I have this arrangement of radio towers here at the house. I have, you know, a 100-foot radio tower with an antenna topping out around 110. Then I have six more 2-inch steel towers that go up 75 feet each. I mean, I'm like Ben Franklin holding on to a kite. Last night, a storm, you know, late storm, really a bad one, too, came rolling in from the southwest. I was on the air on ham radio time, and, you know, the static begins to get louder and louder and louder. Anyway, here comes this monster of a storm with lightning bolts everywhere. And with all of this, it's like I'm saying, hear lightning. And it got so bad last night that I was standing in the living room with a fire extinguisher in my arms for a little while. And I'm going, hon, we're going to get hit. There's no way it can miss it. We're going to get hit. It just can't miss us. Well, thankfully, we did not get hit. But I really thought we were going to, so I thought it was the end of the world for a while. It really has been pretty bad, flash flooding and a lot of real serious weather. But radio, of course, continues to be the central focus of my little retired life. KNYE Radio, the FM radio station we own here that we dearly love. I tell you, it's great for a radio guy like me, because if you have your own radio station, then all the stuff, you know, that you had to put up with earlier in your career from 5 million program directors and managers who always thought they knew exactly what was the right thing to do, and you knew it was wrong, you get to do it. You know, when you own the place, you get to do it. So we're having a lot of fun with that. And Ramona and myself have sort of split the workload. And we both take care of specific areas. And she's very good at what she does. Very, very good. So, you know, then ham radio takes up my life, of course. And radio really in any form at all. Life in general here in the desert seems to be mysterious and reassuring. And by the way, the Matt Drudge-inspired rumor that I am going to come out of retirement and do a show exclusively on XM Radio is in its specific details totally wrong, but mysterious and reassuring at the same time. Now, my back, that which took me out of radio, is better. Now, why is my back better? Well, aside from the fact that I exercise, take my little back pills, and I've lost 50 pounds since I left you in retirement January 1st, 2003, I have lost 50 pounds. And so my back no longer needing to carry around my swollen belly is happier. And if my belly is happier, my back is happier, and I'm happier. So that's a whole lot better. That situation is, well, at the moment, I'm beating the surgeons, right? So I'm really cool for that. In most other ways, I really find the world to be really very much in the same condition as as the last time we met, whenever it was I last did the program. And in fact, the last day I retired from the program, the world really just hasn't changed that much, has it? I still, for example, have not the slightest clue about why we went to war. I don't know. I still don't know why we went to war. Seems to me that before you risk the lives of American men and women, you have a specific reason why you go to war. And I didn't see the reason then, which was a very unpopular statement at the time, and I don't see it now, when perhaps it's more of a popular statement, according to the polls, I guess, the American people getting bone tired of seeing their young people die there. Our climate continues its profound change, while we continue to argue about whose fault it all is, instead of adapting and changing to meet the inevitable. Many of us continue to ignore that which we cannot explain. That's always been the case, hasn't it? The world is really full of great mystery, huh? Which explains, in my opinion, the success of programs of this genre. Looking at the world and what the headlines are tonight, it will be relevant to what we will do in the next hour with Craig Wynn. The headline is, U.S. faces tough sell in the U.N. U.S. calls for help, gets chilly reply. France and Germany, refused Thursday to support a U.S. draft resolution that would spread the burden of running post-war Iraq. American officials want to speed up training for Iraqi security forces, including former members of Saddam's military and intelligence services. Oh, yeah, good. Put them back in service. Defense Secretary Rumsfeld said Thursday, making Iraq safe is a job for Iraqis. And no more U.S. troops are needed in the country. Meanwhile, France is... Oh, it's France. Ha! That they should ever send any troops. England is trying to decide whether they need to send more troops to Iraq right now. Translation for all of this, the administration is getting bone tired of seeing the headlines every day of more Americans, more GIs killed in Iraq. And, of course, as they are, the president's approval rating plummets with that. So we'll talk, obviously, more about that in the next hour. And, oh, by the way, tomorrow night, open lines. Anything you want to talk about tomorrow night is fair game. For a second time this year, a federal judge has thrown out a class action lawsuit that blames McDonald's for making people fat. To me, the question is not why this was tossed out of court, but why it ever got it in the first place. Now, why in the world would anybody sue McDonald's for making them fat? I mean, it's not like McDonald's pushed burgers down their little throats, is it? Hand to mouth, hand to mouth, hand to mouth. That's incredible. But it is an indication of the kind of world we live in today. People would even try that. Virus found in wild animals captured and sold for food in China. Is they're now finding genetically very similar to a virus that infects humans, the SARS, suggesting the disease jumped from animals to humans and might do it again, they say. Now, there's going to be a lot more of that, in my opinion, in coming times. Going to be a lot more of viruses jumping from the animal kingdom to the human kingdom. I think you can look for a whole lot more of that. We will be back. By the way, tomorrow night, once again, open lines. And before I forget, if you have any specific suggestions you would like to make for open lines, we can have a lot of fun. It's Friday night, Saturday morning, and that's time when you can have an awful lot of fun, do damn near anything. So if you have an idea for open lines, something you would think would be an awful lot of fun, then email me. My email addresses remain the same, artbell@mindspring.com. That's A-R-T-B-E-L-L, all lowercase, at mindspring.com, or artbell@AOL.com, and I'll rummage through and see if I can find something to light you on fire tomorrow night. Now, back to what I mentioned about the profoundly changing weather, a couple of items here. One, after I was on last time, in an astonishing announcement on global warming and extreme weather, the World's Meteorological Organization signaled that the world's weather is going haywire. In a startling report, the WMO, which normally produces detailed scientific reports and staid statistics at the year's end, highlighted record extremes in weather and climate occurring all over the world in recent weeks, from Switzerland's hottest ever June to a record month for tornadoes in the U.S. Don't forget all the deaths in France. Link them to climate change. The unprecedented warning takes its force and significance from the fact that it is not coming from Greenpeace nor Friends of Earth, but from an impeccably respected UN organization that is not given to hyperbole. Environmentalists will, of course, seize on it, claim the direst warnings of climate change are being borne out. Now, the Geneva-based body to which the weather services of 185 countries contribute takes the view that events this year in Europe, America, and Asia are so remarkable that the world needs to be made aware of it immediately. The extreme weather it documents, such as record high and low temperatures, record rainfall, record storms in different parts of the world, is consistent with predictions of global warming. Supercomputer models show that as the atmosphere warms, the climate not only becomes hotter, but much more unstable. Recent scientific assessments indicate that as the global temperatures continue to warm due to climate change, the number and intensity of extreme events will increase. And then I noted, I think it was about a month ago, I started getting these emails indicating that the Atlantic Ocean, certain parts of the Atlantic Ocean, had suddenly become cold, very cold. And that is that's a deep concern, without question. For example, here, David Quinlan, who's a surfer from Maryland's eastern shore, knows what cold seawater feels like. It makes exposed flesh feel like it's burning, sets hands and feet to tingling, numbs the body, and after repeated dunkings, produces painful ice cream headaches, right? That's cold. The 38-year-old architect expects all of that when he surfs the frigid waters off Ocean City in January, but he does not expect it in the middle of summer. But that's just what he encountered when he paddled his board into the surf about 2 weeks ago. I've never experienced anything like it in my whole life, he recounted, where the water right along the shore could be that radically cold. Now, he is not alone in his observations. Surfers, lifeguards, anglers, and others who regularly dip a toe into the Atlantic have noticed this summer that water, which is typically bathwater warm, has occasionally become suddenly fjord cold. During most of the month of July, our water temperatures were, I would say, right around normal, according to Captain Butch Arben, head of the Ocean City Beach Patrol. That's in the low 70s, but about 2 weeks ago, he said, there was a tremendous change in temperature, dropping as much as 10 degrees overnight. And I was wondering how the temperature of the ocean would drop 10 degrees overnight. But I have a feeling it's part of the global climate change, and it's part of, well, I'm not altogether sure what it is. Some people blame it on the sun, some global warming, some the hand of man, some natural cycles. But to me, it really doesn't matter what it is, but we must recognize that, in fact, it is happening and begin doing something about it pretty soon. Or, surprise, surprise, areas in the U.S. where we used to be able to grow stuff, we won't be able to grow stuff anymore. Maybe they will in Canada, but we won't. Now you've got to make changes. You've got to adapt to the changing climate, or else. Or this from BBC. Headline, Earth hits 2,000-year warming peak. The Earth would appear to have been warmer since 1980 than at any time in the last 18 centuries, according to scientists. They reconstructed the global climate data derived from ice cores. You know, they can dig down and look. It's like tree rings, right? Vegetation and other records. They believe their research provides unequivocal confirmation that humans are affecting the climate. Well, you know, I don't know if it's humans, but it's something, and it is changing. Or how about this? Here's a nice one. The Alps are collapsing. The Alps! Scientists think that global warming will melt the Alps over the next 20 years. The Alps causing the mountains to collapse into piles of rubble. Now, that's pretty incredible. You've seen pictures of the Alps, right? The towering mountains of rock that look like the most solid thing on, they're collapsing into piles of rubble. The mountain range is made up of rocks with an icy crust of permafrost holding them together. Ah, the key. You see, the ice is melting quickly, and the rocks, which have been held together previously by all of this ice, this permafrost, are going to all fall down. It already makes climbing dangerous. In fact, recently one avalanche killed 50 people. That was about 4 years ago, actually. But I mean, try and imagine the Alps just collapsing. And this is worth a thought or two. 3 years ago, the BBC ran a story about supervolcanoes in Yellowstone. Now, only a few of these exist, hidden deep beneath the Earth's surface. If one should erupt, though, the explosion is going to be heard around the world. It will create dark skies with the effect of a nuclear winter. A past eruption, in fact, may be the reason the North American continent was relatively empty when the Europeans arrived. They looked around, they said, where is everybody? Most volcanoes are formed by a column of molten rock or magma rising from deep within the earth that erupts on the surface, but supervolcanoes are created when magma rises from inside the earth and creates a boiling reservoir in the earth's crust that can become enormous. When it finally builds up enough pressure, it erupts. But because it doesn't come from the traditional cone shape, no one knows until it's too late. In other words, the only thing you notice is a bulge. You know, it's not the traditional volcano. It's just a bulge like they have at Yellowstone. The last supervolcano erupted 74,000 years ago in Sumatra and damn near destroyed all life on Earth. Scientists don't know whether another one is going to blow or when. They do know, though, that one of the largest in the world is under Yellowstone Park. It's been on a regular eruption cycle of 600,000 years. And you might wonder, when was the last time it popped its cork? Well, that would be about 640,000 years ago. So, in other words, we are now long overdue for another big blow. So that's kind of a roundup of what's going on during the second half hour here. And before our guest at the top of the hour, I'll take calls on any subject. Anything that tickles your fancy, questions you wish to ask, or things you wish to bring up. After all, an awful lot has happened since we last spoke, hasn't it? In one way, it has. I mean, a lot of details have occurred, but the world has not really changed, has it? Just a quick... Somebody sent me this, and I thought it was right. Actually, they sent me a couple of things. Why the old ever-present question of why did the chicken cross the road, right? If we were to take replies from different luminaries, they might sound something like this. George W. Bush, we don't really care why the chicken crossed the road. We just want to know if the chicken is on our side of the road or not. The chicken is either with us or it is against us. There is no middle ground here, and we don't like French chickens. Colin Powell. This goes back to the war. Colin Powell. Now at the left of the screen, you can clearly see the satellite image of the chicken crossing the road. You almost see that way. Or Ralph Nader. The chicken's habitat on the original side of the road had been polluted by unchecked industrialist greed. The chicken did not reach the unpolluted habitat on the other side of the road because it was crushed by the wheels of a gas-guzzling SUV. Or Rush Limbaugh. Good old Rush. I don't know why the chicken crossed the road, but I'll bet it was getting a government grant to cross the road, and I'll bet someone out there is already forming a support group to help chickens with crossing the road syndrome. Can you believe it? How much more of this can real Americans take? Chickens crossing the road paid for by their tax dollars. And when I say tax dollars, I'm talking about your money. Money the government took from you to build roads for chickens to cross. And then... and then finally there's Jerry Falwell. Jerry Falwell, because the chicken was gay, isn't it obvious? Can't you people see the plain truth in front of your face? The chicken was going to the other side. That's what they call it. The other side, yes, my friends. That chicken is gay. And if you eat that chicken, you'll become gay too. I say we boycott all chickens until we sort out this abomination that the liberal media whitewashes with seemingly harmless phrases like the other side. One more. Albert Einstein. Did the chicken really cross the road? Or did the road move beneath the chicken?
Presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. And now, filling in for George, here's special guest host, Art Bell.
Indeed so. How are you all doing? It's great to be here. Listen, one more item before we jump into the telephones. And we've got a first time, I guess, you know what? I really ought to play the one here that gives you the phone number, shouldn't I? Our first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. And then we have a wild card line, too, and I can't remember the damn number. So here you go.
From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Filling in for George, tonight's special guest host is Art Bell. To talk with Art, call the wild card line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. East of the Rockies, call 800-825-5033. And west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling the AT&T International Operator and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. Now, for George Norrie, special guest host, Art Bell.
All right, that's better. Now you know the numbers. Space Agency says asteroid might strike Earth in 2014. United Kingdom government agency responsible for identifying potentially hazardous asteroids is warned of a possible collision coming March 12, 2014. What you going to be doing that day, folks? The Near-Earth Object Center says that an asteroid measuring 1.2 kilometers, that's 3/4 of a mile across, is approaching at about 20 miles a second. It's coming our way. It is 1/10 the size of the asteroid thought by some to have wiped out the dinosaurs 65 million years ago. Now, is there a big chance? Well, they're classifying this right now as with a rating of 1 on the Torino scale. That's very bad. But the actual odds are 909,000 to 1 that it will squish us. So, there you have it. But that's one we're going to keep our eyes on. This is a young lady named Matisse. English, French, and African. All right. Let us go to the phones and see what's out there on this night. Not to forget, tomorrow night is open lines. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. And I'm always willing to entertain suggestions for a specific line of some sort, which, as you know, I love doing. In the meantime, shall we rock? Hi there. Welcome to the Rockies. You're on the air. Good evening. Morning. Whatever.
Good evening, Stephen Phoenix.
Yeah, Steve.
I'd like to talk about the East Coast blackout and the Phoenix pipeline break and tie it all together with one word into a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, in other words, you feel you can tie the break in the gas line in Phoenix to the outage on the East Coast. Okay, yeah, that'd be interesting. Go ahead. Let's hear it.
Okay. Dr. Sky was down here in Phoenix talking on the radio, and he pointed out that not only did the East Coast blackout, Canada blacked out, but simultaneously along the 45th northern latitude line, Spain blacked out, France blacked out, and the nation of Georgia also blacked out simultaneously.
Uh-huh. All right. Now, how do you tie that to the...
Well, this means that the science advisors for the president are either completely incompetent and denying that it's a solar event, or the president is playing this off for his energy bill.
Well, we have been having an unprecedented attack from the sun. I mean, there's no question, a lot of G4-type storms, and those threaten power lines, and nobody's even mentioning that. So that's been going on.
Right, and Dr. Sky had it up on his website for 5 days prior to the blackout to look for the blackout and to prepare for a cascade event so it would not shut down the East Coast.
Maybe we ought to talk to Dr. Sky. All right, well, now, how do you tie this into Phoenix?
In Phoenix, we had a pipeline running from Tucson into Phoenix provided 30% of our fuel, 100,000 barrels of fuel a day.
Mm-hmm.
Are used in the Phoenix area. It only provided 30% of that fuel.
Mm.
When the pipeline broke, they immediately got the truck lines moving and bringing in the fuel through alternate sources, and according to the local news reports, they were bringing in 180,000 barrels of fuel a day.
Mm.
But yet the price of gas jumped to $4 a gallon.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, they raise it, you know, if the sun comes up at an odd angle, they raise the price on gas. So,
right.
I mean, but what does that have to do with the East Coast?
Well, the first thing that happened was the administration, the Secretary for Fossil Fuels, stepped up on the radio and says that this is going to affect the AC and electrical power grids across the country because of all of the energy produced by fossil fuels. And we're sitting right here on top of Palo Verde Nuclear Power Plant.
Yeah, I don't know how that goes to Con Ed, though. I mean, that's not their energy source.
Right. But this is a local Phoenix problem. It's a broken pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the only solution he had for this was to declare that gasoline should be brought in under the utilities, that it should be made a utility. And the whole thing ties in together if you simply mention Halliburton to come in and handle rebuilding the entire infrastructure of the utility grid for hundreds and hundreds of trillions of dollars of kickbacks.
Okay, well, I don't know that I can make that case or that anybody can. I appreciate your attempt, but I don't see the connection, frankly, at all. However, that is not to say that I don't see conspiracies in the energy field, because I do. They will raise the price of gasoline just for any cause at all, sometimes no cause whatsoever. They'll just raise the price of gas. If a holiday is coming, it's automatic they raise the price of gas. If they get up in the morning on the wrong side of the bed, they raise the price of gas. And we are at their mercy. Everybody always talks about, let's boycott them. How are you going to do that? You got to get to work, right? You might cut out a little excess driving in order to put a little pressure on, but that's all it's going to be, is a little bit of pressure. Bottom line, you still have to get to work, right? First time caller line, you're on the air. Cheerio.
Hello.
Hi.
I was going to talk to you about the plane that went down in Pennsylvania after the 9/11 attacks, or during the 9/11 attacks.
About the plane that went down there? Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The one where the passengers took it down, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
You had, I remember before you retired, you had talked about how the plane had two debris fields, and it wasn't talked about much in the media.
Yes.
I went to a training class. I work in law enforcement, and a specialist came in that works out of the D.C. area, and he said the reason that happened, there was two debris fields, was because of wind shear. The tail section of the plane broke off because of the angle of descent.
Could be.
Yeah. Well, that was That was from somebody that did an investigation on it. So I just wanted to pass that on to you.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I thought the real story there, no matter how many debris fields there were, was that American citizens who are frequently maligned as not caring, American citizens who are frequently maligned as unpatriotic and uncaring and not willing to get involved, you know, allowing somebody to be raped without dialing 911. In this case, when they knew they were dead, and they did know they were dead, they made a group decision to take that airplane into the ground instead of allowing it to go and probably plow into the White House or wherever it was headed. So I thought that said a lot, a whole lot, about Americans, any specific group of Americans, the Americans on that particular flight. It was an incredibly heroic act. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Oh, it's good to talk to you again. This is Ken. Tell your wife I said hi, the guy you met at the gas station in Searchlight.
You mean when we were in our RV?
That's correct.
And I stopped in I think I may have been peeling the various high-velocity insect casualties off my windshield at the time.
Yeah, that's correct. That was me. You could be a long-haul trucker, man. You did good that night. Unfortunately, I beat you to the rest area and took your parking spot.
I don't know how you guys, you truckers, can do it. I don't have the slightest idea. I mean, I went through blizzards of bugs. I had more bugs on the front of my RV. It was so bad you hardly see the front of the thing. And how do you handle that out on the road?
Well, you got to just stop as often as we can and just knock them off. That's all. I carry that bug juice inside my water reservoir, and it does a great job on it, knocking them off. It gets pretty thick around that time of the year.
Yeah.
In America, you can tell when you see Art Bell on the road. Believe me, you can tell when you see his RV.
It's true. He recognized me as I was.
I'm not going to give it away. I swear, Art, that's how I knew it was you for sure. I say, who would have an RV like this? No one else but Art Bell.
Well, it does have an unusual top to it, doesn't it?
It really does.
I people stop me, and they people in fact have almost crashed into me trying to figure out what it is I've got on my roof. Of course, it's a gigantic antenna, but we've had almost several crashes. All right, sir, thank you very, very much for the call and reminding me. I met that gentleman at a station where I was debugging the front of the vehicle. Oh man, I'm telling you, blizzards of bugs, little tiny black bugs, great big, juicy orange bugs. They came in every color. And they, you know, if you don't get them off right away, then they harden onto your windshield and onto the front of your RV to the point where you'll never get them off, or it will take you at the very least hours to get them off. It is the worst part of long-haul driving, in my opinion. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Hey. I was interested in the scientist, genius named Tesla, I think.
Nikola Tesla, yes.
Yes. Now, I heard something about him actually making wireless electricity that would, go from, antennas.
Yes, those are the claims that he made, that he would be able to pluck energy virtually out of the air with antennas, yes. Mm-hmm. And that it could be transferred that way, that we don't need wires and poles and all that stuff to get electricity from A to B to C, that we can just send it through the air. Yes.
And another question about Tesla. I heard that he was working on an experiment way over on the other side of the Earth, and, I don't know the exact story, but somehow, there was an explosion in Siberia in 1912, I think it was.
Tunguska, yes.
Yeah, so do you think he had anything to do with that, with his experiment that he was working on?
No, thank you. Not to the best of my knowledge, no. Tunguska was a big old rock coming in, something like that. But Nikola Tesla, of course, is a fascinating individual, and I didn't really give you any updates on my antenna. I have this monstrous antenna out there. And since we last spoke, I decided, well, the ground out here wasn't very good. You know, we live in the desert, and gosh, in the desert, we have what we call poof dirt, and it's not a very good ground. And so I went out and purchased 1,000 feet of this 4-foot-wide mesh, you know, wire, welded wire mesh. And then I put this wire all the way around 1,000 feet of the antenna, and I connected it to my water well, which goes down 160 feet into the water. I connected it to about 15 ground rods, to my tower ground, to my radio station ground here, and everything. And so I've got this monstrous man-made grounding system underneath my antenna right now. And yesterday after the storm, the afternoon storm yesterday had cleared away, I went out to do some work on my antenna, and I took a moment to, in doing so, I had to disconnect it from the special grounding arrangement I've put in there to, you know, to stop all this electricity that I don't want in here that mysteriously appears on my antenna. Well, of course, in the process of doing that, I miscalculated, as usual, and got the wire between myself and ground, and I took one hell of a jolt. Oh, my gracious, did I take a jolt. Now, we had what I would call debris clouds overhead at the time. It wasn't an active storm or even anything electrical, just debris clouds, but that's all it took. And there was enough voltage on that antenna so that after I got myself up off the ground, after getting knocked on my keister, I held one side of the antenna near ground, and I got a good half-inch blue spark jumping to ground. And so, you know, Mr. Tesla may have been absolutely correct. There is an awful lot of something coming from somewhere. And as you know, when Nikola Tesla died, they rushed right in and took all his stuff and took it away, and they have sequestered it and done who knows what with it. But, yeah, he thought he could pluck energy right from the the air. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
Dave in Spokane.
Okay. Welcome.
I haven't heard. Pardon?
I said welcome.
Oh. Update on the chemtrail in Spokane, Washington about 3 weeks ago.
Update on what? Turn your radio off. That's going to confuse you.
Oh, yes. That's a cardinal sin.
Yeah,
okay.
Cardinal sin.
Yes. 3 weeks ago in Spokane, Washington, there was 2021 heavy light curling trails about...
You said chemtrails. Is that what you're saying?
That's what it seemed to be.
Yeah.
There were oily, slick, little donut circles way up in the sky, and very untraceable. Now, I know previously I haven't heard anything updated, but someone was going to go up and take a sample of that.
Yes, that's true, and I don't know what the current state of all that is, but I will say this. You know, I don't think anybody anymore questions a profound change occurring in our weather, right?
Not one way or the other, necessarily, no.
Well, but there is a change occurring. I mean,
worldwide,
there's an obvious change. And now, maybe somebody in Washington, thick as they tend to be, has recognized the fact that something is changing, and maybe they're trying to do something about it. Now, see, that's an optimistic look at what chemtrails might be.
Protection for the people? Or?
Well, yeah, something like that. Or the government trying to protect us or something or another. But it's either that or they're testing something, or, I mean, what do you think it might be?
Well, a lot of people have sniffles like a flu-like symptom. However, they don't really feel that bad. It just comes and goes after 2 or 3 days after this occurs.
Well, you don't think our own government would do spray something that would make us sick intentionally, do you?
I'm not saying on that. But it is interesting how it's a coincidence or... what have you there. It's quite interesting.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call. I don't know what chemtrails are. They contain, when analyzed, some very interesting materials, most specifically aluminum. I think it was aluminum, right? Yes. And why would they be spraying something with aluminum in it, if in fact they are doing it? So I'm not caught up on the chemtrail story, but I have no further idea of what they are now than I did when I did the programs on the subject. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Cheerio.
Er.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Cheerio. I'm great.
Turn your radio off.
I just did. I hit it up and on. I want to tell you I'm invalid. I've been in a wheelchair for 10 years. I used to work at the Billy Mine in Death Valley.
You did?
Yes, right above Furnace Creek.
Oh, yes. Death Valley is probably the closest actual place to where I am, other than being from Nevada. Death Valley is closest.
Indubitably. We had to go. The only place to shop was Vegas, and we had to, if anybody had any brains, we had to drive through Pahrump.
Yes, well, you see, now all of that has changed. Were you to come back to this area now, you would notice an incredible change in this little town. There was nothing more than a little dust spot originally. Pahrump now boasts our own Walmart. We have a Walmart here in Pahrump. We have really grown up. Pahrump is blossoming and going absolutely berserk. And so now, one who previously would have to go to Las Vegas for his shopping from Death Valley, how anybody could ever live in that place? Do you know what the temperatures are like in Death Valley? Typically, on a typical summer day, temperatures are, oh, say, 126 degrees, 130 degrees in Death Valley. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to just tell about a meteorite I saw tonight on the way home from work, or something that looked like a meteorite, around 8:25 this evening in Sacramento, California.
Well, was there any reason to believe it was other than a meteorite?
No. I just didn't know what it was for sure.
Well, then it was a meteorite.
Oh.
When they come down, you're supposed to wish upon them.
Okay.
A falling star, right?
Yeah, but it was pretty big, and it came down real close to the Earth before it burned out. I thought it was going to land before it burned out.
Well, maybe it wasn't a meteorite. Maybe it had pods.
I don't know.
Mm. Yeah. Well, anyway, make a wish, all right?
All right. It's good hearing your voice.
Take care, hon. All right. We are going to embark upon a slightly different course tonight with Craig Wynn up next. We're going to talk about the war and why we're having it.
The mist across the window hides the line, but nothing hides the color of the lights that shine. Electricity so fine. Look and dry your eyes.
Or the scent of a sand, or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard, and to use them to help us to
coast to coast and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Filling in for George, tonight's special guest host is Art Bell. To talk with Art, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. East of the Rockies, call 800-825-5033. And west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling the AT&T International Operator and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. Now, for George Norrie, special guest host, Art Bell.
George is taking the evening off, well-deserved at that. Tomorrow night, too, and we'll do open lines. Don't forget, if you have a suggestion for open lines tomorrow night, feel free to email it to me, and I will review it for possible use. That'd be Art Bell at mindspring.com or Art Bell at AOL.com. All right, coming up in a moment, we're going to talk about the war. Now, as you know, I had very strong feelings about it before we did it, before we got involved. I couldn't figure out why we were about to have a war. I still can't. So tonight we'll talk about that with Craig Wynn. This should be very interesting. Craig Wynn graduated from the University of Southern California with business degrees in marketing and finance. He then built the Wynn Company into one of the nation's leading marketing and sales firms. In the 1980s, Craig founded and built Dynasty, a $100 million international lighting company. In the 90s, he founded Value America, building it into the world's second largest e-tailer. He became one of the era's vapor billionaires in the process. I mean to ask him about that. Vapor billionaire. On the morning of September 11th, Wynn teamed up with Kevin Power to expose the root cause of terror. They personally interviewed members of Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Fatah, Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, Force 17, the Palestinian Authority, the Israeli Knesset, IDF, and American generals, as well as Israeli Secret Service agents in the Mossad and Shin Bet. In addition to these meetings, Mr. Wynn has invested 4,000 hours studying Islam, has traveled to over 120 foreign countries. His book, Tea with Terrorists, was written to share what he and Mr. Power discovered in their journey. So coming up in a moment, Craig Wynn. Don't touch that dial. I want to make one thing very clear, you know, at the beginning of this program. We are going to talk without any question about Islam. Now, we're not going to talk about all Islamics. We're just not. We're going to talk about extreme Islamics. And there's a very large difference, and for those of you who don't get that difference, I guess you'll just have to complain and bitch and moan. But the fact of the matter is, we're going to be talking about people who basically want us dead. That's not all of Islam. That's a faction, a section, a portion of Islam. But indeed, it is a significant one from our point of view, since it is our lives they wish to extinguish. So we are going to talk about it, and I'm not going to be deterred from that. I understand there are certain sensitivities out there, and I'm just going to have to ask you to bear with them, because we're talking about a very, very serious thing here. We're talking about people who want to kill us. That's pretty basic, isn't it? And they've already proven that. Craig Wynn, I hope, can give us some insight into precisely why they want to kill us and just how much of Islam we're talking about. In the meantime, here is Craig Wynn. Craig, welcome to the program.
Good evening. Boy, it's my pleasure to be with you. You're the king of late night, and for you to be guest hosting the show that you built, it's really an honor to have you back.
It is an honor to be here, actually. Thank you. I'm probably going to twist all of your questions out of the proper order here. The first thing I'm really quite curious about is a tea with terrorists. Why did you decide? Well, no, even before I ask you that, let me go back to what the hell's a vapor billionaire? I mean, you were a billionaire for a little while? Or
I was indeed. Well, that's what my stock certificate said anyway. When you found a company, you own 100% of the shares, and you gradually give up a percentage as you raise money. I raised $300 million for Value America. By the time I had finished raising money, I owned about 45% of the company. And when we went public, if you multiplied my number of shares times the, I think it was 70 some odd dollars a share, I was worth well over $1 billion.
What does that feel like?
Awful, really.
Awful?
Really, it does. It really feels awful. You feel extremely vulnerable, and you recognize that it's just not real.
A lot of people, nevertheless, would like to feel your pain.
Huh. Yeah, it's not painful in that sort of sense. It's just there's a sense of vulnerability that comes with that, and an awesome sense of responsibility.
Hmm. I assume that when the stock bubble burst, your billion went down to millions or less.
Oh, it was certainly it fell appreciably, and it's really quite a story. I ended up co-authoring a book with one of the five founders of Value America, Ken Power, called In the Company of Good and Evil, specifically to talk about that experience from the insider's perspective and to warn Americans as to what's going on in corporate America, particularly in the boardrooms of public companies, because we're on the cusp of losing something very dear, and I wanted to share what it was really like.
What are we on the cusp of losing?
Well, in the business world, Art, you've got a runaway train. You have corporate boards who meet in person maybe twice a year, who know almost nothing about the companies that they're making decisions on behalf of.
Mm-hmm.
You've got these professional managers who are paid, in some cases, 10 times more than they're worth, principally interested in what they can do in the short term to increase the value of their stock options and really line their own pockets. They have no conception of the value of money and waste it. You've got this form of accounting, this accrual-based accounting, which we're...
Is this a new perversion of capitalism, or has it, you know, has it always been this way?
It's gotten progressively worse, and the interrelationship between the accountants, the lawyers, and the investment bankers, corporate boards, and professional managers is incestuous, and it is extraordinarily corrupt. And as an investor in public companies, you really ought to be very careful, because the only source of information, for example, is the analysts from the investment banking firm, and almost all of them got their job by getting good grades in school. None of them have a clue as to how to manage a business, and the accountants that keep score can tell you how many trees are in the forest, but they can't tell you if any of those trees are alive or not.
Now, is this a view that you held prior to your vapor billion, or did this come to you after the slide?
It is a view that I held prior.
Really?
And, in fact, one of the reasons that I'm in a position to do what I'm doing now on this link between Islam and terror that you hinted at earlier in your introduction is that, having been in a position where I was an outspoken person on behalf of what I thought was the corruption within the business world, the business world did not take kindly to that. I have been raped publicly, if you will. Truth is not a popular thing.
No, I know.
Particularly among people who have a vested interest in the game of deceit. And so I have been an outspoken person on behalf of what's wrong with corporate America, and corporate America, particularly the media that supports it, has not taken kindly to that.
Well, I mean, what do you think is going to happen to America? We are certainly in the middle of a great global change. The Chinese are rising quickly. The Chinese are doing now to the Japanese what the Japanese did to us. I mean, looking at the economic picture around the world right now, just before we get on off into this other subject, where do you think we're headed?
I spoke a lot about that in The Company of Good and Evil. And what I suggested is that the way that our government has embraced business, actually made business a foe in America, we have created a most unlevel playing field on behalf of foreign producers, particularly China. So if you walk down the aisles of a Walmart, the majority of the products will say made in China on side.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So it's a combination of the payment mechanism called the International Letter of Credit and the mentality of our government, in the way that no one in politics gets to politics by having been successful in business. They're usually lawyers, and therefore almost every decision that they make is counterproductive to the engine of our economy. And we will continue, I believe, politically to throw sand in the cart of the productive engine of America until the cart can no longer be pulled.
Meaning that America will cease to become the economic power it has been, and may perhaps can be said is now. And
that is correct. I believe that is the...
Are we talking about decades here? How quickly could this occur?
I believe we're looking at an outside window of 2 decades.
2 decades. That's not very long. All right. Now, for some reason, you developed an interest in terrorists in Al-Qaeda. After 9-11, this all occurred after post-9-11 or what?
Oh, yes. I was like the average American watching the events of 9-11 unfold in horror. The difference was that I had retired from business, so I had some free time, and I was quite well connected in the political sense, so I had the context to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And having been, been on the cover of national magazines and in the news so much, I recognized that apart from talk radio, which is really the last bastion of intelligent, I think, discourse in America, the mainstream media is wrong on almost everything it says. So I was convinced that our politicians and the mainstream media would miscommunicate what is really happening and why these terrorists are killing us. We wouldn't know who they are, mm-hmm. and we would not know why they kill. And then we as a nation, I thought, would have a knee-jerk reaction to go after an enemy that we do not understand. And mm-hmm. I wanted to learn as much as I could to see if I could help prevent that from occurring.
You actually met with Al-Qaeda?
Yes, I did. At gunpoint.
At gunpoint.
Unfortunately, I was not the one holding the gun.
I very much would like to hear how this occurred. How did you arrange this meeting, and how did it come to pass?
The morning of 9/11, the first thing I tried to do is arrange a meeting with George Bush, and I know George Bush, and I was unable to pull it off before he had his speech where he stated his position that he was going to go to war against an enemy he didn't understand. So I did the next best thing I could do. I went to Ground Zero for suicide bombers worldwide. That's all 9/11 was a giant suicide bomb. Mm-hmm. That happens to be Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And there I arranged meetings with Palestinian Authority ministers, with Knesset ministers, with the Mossad, which is the Israeli CIA.
All of that I could understand. In other words, that would be, for somebody with a little political clout, that would be possible. I don't see how you get to Al-Qaeda.
Okay. Right? 10 days of meeting with all of these politicos, I had a singular agenda. I wanted to ask the terrorists themselves why they were killing us. And after 10 days of meeting with these people, they finally acquiesced to arranging a series of meetings.
Now, how is it somebody, for example, from the Knesset, or would it be the Palestinian Authority, more likely?
Palestinian Authority.
Oh, okay.
Palestinian Authority. But it had to be done in conjunction with the Israeli Mossad knowing about it, or there was no way to arrange the meetings. So,
well, usually when the Mossad knows the location of an Al-Qaeda operative, or even more so a kingpin, they dispatch missiles and blow them up.
That's right. They did not, the way this was arranged, they did not know the location or even the name of the people I was going to meet with. They know them now, but they did not know them then.
I see.
What happened was that the Palestinian Authority introduced me to a member of Force 17. Force 17 is like our Secret Service, except they work for Yasser Arafat.
Mm-hmm.
And the Force 17 member arranged a meeting in a bunker that all the Mossad knew is they were going to take me to the border. I had to sign a piece of paper that said that what I was doing was crazy, that I would never see the light of day again, that the Israeli government could do nothing to save me. They did not know where they were taking me. All they were going to do is take me to the border and give me the passwords for the people I was going to meet with.
Well, now, were you ostensibly part of the media, or, how were you representing yourself?
I represented myself as an author who wanted to tell the story about this conflict of international terrorism.
All right.
And to understand the grievance from the perspective of those who were perpetrating the terror. So I told them the truth. Now, I'm sure they didn't hear it that way. They probably heard, here's another media guy, and I get a chance to tell my story.
Mm-hmm.
And, Art, it's not difficult, and it's not easy, but it's not impossible to meet with these guys. The difficult part is actually surviving the meeting.
Yes. They do. They kidnap people and kill them on a somewhat regular basis. So, you must have had some few moments of reflection before you did this about the fact that you might die.
Yes. In fact, the last words that the Mossad agent, who I came to really respect a great deal, said to me as I turned towards the door of the van that I was in was, if you lift the latch of that door and walk across that border, you're a dead man if you're not on God's mission.
Uh-huh. And so you didn't, make a decision to stay in the car. I mean, someone says you're a dead man, and somebody from the Mossad says you're a dead man, and most people would stay in the car and say, I get your point.
Well, unless you really thought that you were called to do it. I felt that I was being called to do it, and so I recognized that if Yahweh, who's the name of the God of the Bible, if If he genuinely wanted me to do this, he was not going to allow me to get killed before I had a chance to report back to the American people what I had learned. Hmm. And if I was wrong, then you know, so be it.
All right.
I was willing to take that risk. And if somebody doesn't take that kind of a risk, how are we ever going to know?
Well, that's right. So you're out of the vehicle. Now what?
Oh, I cross what's called no man's land, which is a terrible mix of barbed wire and fences and broken buildings and armed guards roaming around. And that's about 200 yards long. And there's a van that has been described to me that blinks its lights three times. I see it. We have a series of passwords that we will exchange. I get in this van. We exchange the passwords, and the driver says nothing more. And from that point on, we go through streets that are lined with men and boys carrying automatic weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And they're...
That's almost all of Israel.
They're pointed at me because they're expecting me. We drive for a better part of a half an hour.
You're where? I mean, you're in Palestinian controlled territory.
Yes.
I assume.
Yes. Yeah. Once you cross the border, that's the reason why the Mossad says, "Hey, we can't go with you."
Uh-huh.
There is
and,
nothing.
And you did all of this with no instructions, nor support from the Mossad or CIA or any other government.
Well, I had instructions from the Mossad, which was, "Don't do this."
Well, yeah, but I mean, other than that.
No, they said, you know, if you're convinced that you want to do this, all you're going to be able to go in with is a pen and paper. And that's
okay.
It. So from that point on, you are on your own. All we can do is hope and pray that you are able to get out and that you get out before sunset.
So going through town, people pointing guns.
Yeah, some of them we've just it's so bizarre because to have an adult point an automatic weapon at you is a strange feeling. But to have someone that is 8, 9, and 10 years old in a group of 3 or 4 walk up to the window of your car and chamber around in a pistol,
mm-hmm.
9 or 10 millimeter pistol,
mm-hmm.
and point that at your head and let it scrape the window as it goes by,
mm-hmm.
that's an entirely different experience. The trigger doesn't know that that's a child holding it.
That's right.
And very, very odd. They take me finally, after they change cars, they change drivers, to a bunker that's in this rock building underground. We walk through a series of steel doors, guards in a collection of either M16s or AK-47s all the way along, go into one final steel door down in this basement. The basement's only about 5 feet 10, one light broken light bulb hanging in the middle of the room, one table with steel chairs, looks like a prison interrogation room.
Oh, brother.
And bars on the little slit that exists in the room, and that's it. I walk in, sit down, pull out my note paper and my pen, and for the next 6 hours, they paraded terrorists through the room.
All right. Hold it right there. Well, how many of us would have the guts to do that? 9-year-olds with automatic weapons pointing at you. Welcome. Glad to have you here. I'm Art Bell. We'll be right back.
Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. And now, filling in for George, here's special guest host, Art Bell.
The future won't last. It'll soon be your tomorrows. Ain't that the truth? Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. My guest is Craig Wynn. And, of course, I'm in for George Norrie, who's taking a very deserved day off today and actually tomorrow as well, when we'll be doing open lines. Tonight, we're going to talk about terrorism, specifically in Al-Qaeda, and the people that want to kill us. And aren't you curious why they want us dead? I certainly am. The media, the American media, doesn't really cover that aspect of it. They just cover the fact they want us dead. But why? The big why? That's what I hope we're going to learn tonight. Stay right where you are. So we have somebody here, Craig Wynn, who went into the lair of the enemy and got to sit there for hours and hours with a pen and pad and ask questions of people like Al-Qaeda, groups like Al-Qaeda. And so, you know, I guess what I would like to know, Craig, and maybe you had a lot of different ways of approaching it, and I certainly want to hear everything or the highlights of what they said to you at least. But, I mean, basically, I guess I'd like to know why they so want us dead.
Yeah, that is the most important question, isn't it?
Do you remember the movie Independence Day?
Oh, sure. I loved it.
Well,
yeah.
The really great thing, especially in the first half of that movie, was, you know, the aliens in that movie, they didn't want to bargain with us. They didn't want to change our national policy. The only thing they wanted was us dead.
Yes.
And that reminds me of this. I mean, that seems that way. They just want us dead. Well, how come?
Yes, and there are two very different answers depending on which group you ask. And since we're going to migrate to a discussion of Iraq, I'd like to express the difference depending if they are a religious terrorist or a political terrorist. And they are different.
Okay.
The first group I met with was a political group of terrorists. They were members of Fatah. Fatah is the political party. It's a socialist communist party. It was founded by Yasser Arafat. Yasser Arafat, by the way, did not found the PLO. PLO was founded by Nasser, a communist in Egypt at the time. But Fatah was the political organization that these three men belonged to. It was a captain and two lieutenants. They described themselves as army men that were part of the Asqa Martyrs Brigade. Now, they said that they were not terrorists. They said that they were army men following orders. So the first thing, of course, I asked them was, well, whose orders are you following? Mm-hmm. And the captain said, I'm a direct report to Yasser Arafat.
Hmm.
I said, all right, what kind of orders does Yasser Arafat give you? And these three men just all burst out laughing. I mean, just grinning from ear to ear. And I said, you're going to share with me what you're laughing about. And they said, well, you know, 2 days ago, you know what happened. And I said, no, not the bus to Emmanuel. I said, yes, the bus to Emmanuel. We blew the axles off that bus, and we were not terrorists because we didn't blow ourselves up. I said, but 11 children and women, unarmed, had their heads blown off by men wielding M16s like the one sitting right here on this desk in front of me.
Wow.
And they said, yeah, that was us. I said, the three of you killed those 11 innocent souls. Yes, they were gleeful about it. And by the way, they said, you know, we don't have a problem with America. We don't want Americans dead. If it wasn't for America, we wouldn't have our guns. You gave us these guns.
Well, you mentioned they had some M16s.
And the two lieutenants said, and we were trained by the CIA in America, in Virginia.
That figures.
And when I came back and was debriefed by the CIA, they said, yes, in fact, we did supply the guns. We supplied them on orders from Bill Clinton. Following the Oslo Accords, Yasser Arafat said, I'm going to need a police department to be able to hunt down the terrorists and do my job.
That's true.
And these terrorists are going to need to be trained. And so we provided the training, we provided the guns, and they used them to kill innocent people. So these guys said that we are part of what is currently the majority in the Palestinian-controlled areas, But he says, we will not be the majority very long because the real crazies are growing very, very fast. And there is so much money being thrown at them that they will very soon be the majority. And you Americans are so naive. You know so little about them. And when they become the majority here, which they will very, very soon, there'll be nothing anyone can do. Now, when a group of people who have just killed at point-blank range with automatic weapons, 11 women and children, call another group of people crazy, you got to be worried.
You also have
to be worried when your government, the government, you know, I was not there as a representative of America. I was there as an individual. But when it's still America's my country, I love America. When you're told that your country trained and equipped men who murdered innocent people, it hurts too. By the way, they said that the majority of their funding comes from America as well.
Well, you know, historically, of course, America has trained and armed many who turn around and put the bullets in Americans. So,
well, for example, we saved Stalin in World War II, and as a result of us giving the guns and the and the tanks and the food to Stalin, and the same thing with Mao in China.
Or more recently, the Mujahideen. It doesn't matter. We've done it historically.
All through time, the last 60 years, all we have is a history of manufacturing our next enemy.
We are, after all, the world's biggest arms dealer.
We are indeed. We have more weapons of mass destruction than anybody else on the planet.
Well, we do. Well, we know we have them.
So the second group of terrorists had an entirely different agenda. Now, this group of terrorists were all religious terrorists. They belong to Al-Qaeda, which means the foundation, and the foundation is a religious foundation. Interesting enough, Al-Qaeda was actually founded by a Palestinian academician. Hamas, Hezbollah, and Islamic Jihad. And there really isn't any difference between any of these groups. In fact, one of the great travesties that we have in reporting in America is that we want to identify Al-Qaeda as our principal villain, and we then try to take organizations like this Indonesian organization, Jamaah Islamiyah, and we want to say they are the Al-Qaeda wing in Indonesia. That's nonsense.
Well, there must be some difference, because for Al-Qaeda, the United States was and is a target. For these other groups, frequently it's just the Israelis. So Al-Qaeda's branched out a bit.
Yes. Clearly, they have differing fields of interest, but they aren't. They're all singing from the same hymnal.
Then, with respect to Al Qaeda, why do they want us dead? It's religiously based.
It is religiously based. Uh-huh. What they did when I asked them why they wanted us dead, they 100% of the time they quoted the prophet's words out of what's called the Hadith or the Sunnah.
Mm-hmm.
There are four books that were written within 250 years of the prophet's death, only four that have his words and deeds in them. And they quoted from those books, and they quoted from the Quran, which the same prophet says are the words of a God named Allah.
Mm-hmm.
And those words were, we have been ordered to wipe the infidels out to the last. We have been ordered to fight the disbelievers until the only religion is Islam.
In other words, from their point of view, believe or die.
It's either believe or die. Yeah. And so I was in the position that really everyone that's in a position of political power in America or in a position of responsibility within the journalistic community should be in, which is since what they told me is not all that different from what we hear in their press releases to the media,
mm-hmm.
you really need to know, are they quoting these things correctly, in context and correctly? If they are, then in fact their religion is corrupting them. If they're taking these things out of context and quoting them incorrectly,
mm-hmm.
then the argument should be made that they are corrupting their religion, and that we need to find out where this form of corruption is. And that's really what I went to find. I was convinced that they were corrupting their religion, and I wanted to find out what kind of modern-day prophet, if you will, they were following who had somehow corrupted what was otherwise a loving and peaceful
religion.
Well,
prior to your meeting with them, you had studied Islam, had you not?
I had. I have probably, I think, last count, about 10,000 hours into the study of it. But I did not at the time. I had, you know, I knew probably, you know, a thousandfold more than the average American about Islam. I probably know more than any American about Islam.
Right. Did you know enough about Islam at that point to understand that you were hearing perversions in the quotes?
I did, and unfortunately, what I knew was that I was not hearing perversions in the quotes. What I expected to hear was...
Now, that's a very important point. You're saying that what you were quoted is no perversion, meaning, that said in the American press, you hear that everywhere. There's an Islamic specialist on, they will say, well, this is all because of perversion of belief. And so there's a big difference in what you're saying. You're saying, oh, no, it's not a perversion in belief. This is what was written.
There is no truth that I could convey to you and your audience more important than that one. I expected them to quote someone like Qutb, who's an Egyptian scholar whose writings became the foundation for the Muslim Brotherhood and was the first Islamicist to do something that hadn't been done in many, many centuries, which was to target non-Muslims, because the Wahhabis, for example, have always targeted, good Muslims have targeted bad Muslims. Mm. And so I expected them to quote the writings of Qutb, who's the kind of the Martin Luther of the modern Islamicist jihadist movement, if you will. They did not do that. They quoted directly out of their scriptures, and they quoted them correctly. And not only did they quote them correctly, they didn't take them out of context, and they didn't cherry-pick the bad ones from a sea of good ones.
Hmm.
That's the single most important thing that I can tell you, and that is profound for many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One of those reasons is that means that the President of the United States is lying to us. That means that he sent in troops to combat an enemy that he is denying the nature of. That means that the American media will propagate a lie to the American people, willfully, knowingly. And that means that we are being killed by people who believe that doing so is a service to their God.
Why is it mainstream belief in America that it is not all of Islam? That, in fact, it is only a small segment of Islam that knows or believes this or is radicalized by this?
Because that actually happens to be true. Most Muslims, my guess is that it's 90% of Muslims in America and 80% of Muslims worldwide.
Yes.
Do not know their prophet, do not know their scriptures. And so what we will talk about in terms of what do these scriptures actually say about this man and this God,
they do not know.
You're
really saying that if they properly understood the scriptures, they'd be plowing airplanes into buildings.
Well,
not
necessarily. If they knew them and applied them,
yes.
100, it is impossible, by Allah's definition in the Quran,
yes.
to be a good Muslim and not be a terrorist. It is impossible by Allah's definition in the Quran to be a good Muslim and not be a terrorist.
Perhaps you should give me a couple of quotes that you feel justify that position.
I will do so.
If you would.
But since really knowing what Muhammad was like and what he said and understanding what Allah ordered and what he is like would cause all rational people to flee Islam. So I don't think that knowing these scriptures would cause most Muslims to become terrorists. I think it would do exactly the opposite. It would cause most Muslims not to be Muslims anymore. And that is my principal goal, is I want to expose what the scriptures actually say so that thinking men and women that have choice
They would be so.
Make the right choice.
You're suggesting they would be so morally offended by a proper interpretation that they simply wouldn't move in that direction.
Yes, and I wouldn't even use the word interpretation. You don't need to interpret these things.
By the
words,
words
are extremely simple.
Give me a few.
Okay, let's take a couple of these and get an idea what Muslims are actually told.
Yeah.
To believe and think.
Go right ahead.
I'm going to read, this is from the ninth surah. Slay the infidels wherever you find them. Infidels are defined, by the way, in the fifth surah, which was the last handed down in 572, as anyone who says that Christ is the Messiah. So an infidel is a Christian. Slay the infidels wherever you find them. Lie in wait for them. Fight these specimens of faithfulness. Fight them that Allah may punish them at your hands and put them to shame. And Allah sent down invisible troops, these are killer angels, to punish the infidels. Fight the Christians and Jews until they all pay the protective tax in submission and humility. How perverse are they?
Wait a minute. The protective tax.
Yeah, that's a real interesting thing. In Islam, there are two forms of taxation. In fact, Islam, when you read the Islamic hadith, what you find is that Muhammad founded Islam for the money. And it becomes just this sea of terrorist raids to confiscate other people's money. And once you become a Muslim in one of these raids, then you must pay a Islamic tax called the zakat. But if you are not a Muslim, you must pay the jihad. And that tax is hugely more punitive. And it is a tax imposed on all non-Muslims who are conquered by the sword of Islam.
Huh.
And when they conquer, their Quran tells them that they are to give the infidels, the unbelievers, three choices. Convert and become a Muslim and pay the lesser tax, the zakat. Stay a Christian or Jew and pay what is ultimately financial suicide, the jihad, or die.
Oh, gee, I shouldn't laugh, but I had no idea there were such provisions for buying oneself out of the necessity to believe. That's crazy. I guess just about every war we really ever fight, or the reason we kill each other, mostly is over religion, isn't it?
Well, you know, when I studied this, I came to the conclusion that religion is poison. Now, interestingly enough, if you're a Christian or a Jew listening to this, neither Judaism nor Christianity were founded as religions. As a matter of fact, the word religion is not in the Old Testament at all.
Nevertheless, with that line, you still managed to offend everybody across the board.
I'm certain that's true.
Yeah.
But understand the definition of religion. Religion is not even in the Old Testament. The Old Testament is a covenant, which is a relationship. The New Testament, the Gospels, is a personal relationship with the creator of the universe. It is neither is a religion. In fact, Christ himself was anti-religious. Now, Islam was founded as a religion. The Quran uses religion throughout, and Muhammad says that that Allah chose the religion named submission for man. So in Islam, there is no choice. The only choice that exists is the choice that Allah makes. In fact, all Muslims, all people on the planet, according to the hadith and the Quran, are born predestined to heaven and hell, and they say that 999 out of every 1,000 people are predestined, born to be the faggots for hell's fires.
Listen, we're coming up on a break. Very quickly, with what you know about Islam, is a war between Islam and Christianity or Islam and the West inevitable?
Yes.
Take that, yes. Just hold it right there. Okay. We'll be right back. We'll take a break here. I'm Art Bell.
Yeah. What? Absolutely. Uh-huh. Say it again, what is it good for? Absolutely. Nothing. Listen to me.
Can't get through, where are you?
Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. And now, filling in for George, here's special guest host, Art Bell.
Yes, that would be me. What an honor to be in here for George. Thank you very much, everybody. My guest is Craig Wynn. He went into the lair of those who would see us dead. And on a fairly regular basis lately, I've been demonstrating that. It's quite a discussion to have. Now, bear in mind what he just said. Shocking as it may have been that the American media and even our president have it all wrong. And that if you really read the words and adhere to them in a very fundamentalist way, might be a way to put it, that they'd all be terrorists. Well, no, they wouldn't. 90-95% might not be, but that'd be... because once they understood what it really means, their basic center, moral center would stop them and make them instead walk away from those beliefs. So that clears 90 or 95%, I suppose, in that sense. So we're not talking about all of Islam. We're talking about those who don't interpret things a certain way, but simply believe them in a very, very fundamental way. We'll get back to all of that at Craig Wynn in a moment. Once again, Craig Wynn. Craig, here's what I'm curious about. If our president, if certainly our government and our intelligence agencies within our government and other governments understand, if what you say is so, they understand the same things. They know what this is all about. So I, based on that and what they must have told our president, unless they're lying to our president, after 9/11, what should the president have said versus what he did say? Oh, Craig's not there. I'm going to have to read all Craig. Craig Wynn is gone. I wonder how that happened. Good old telephone systems, I'll tell you. Now I'm going to have to rephrase that entire question. Well, I'm used to this. Live radio, that's the way it works. Let's see if we can get Craig back in. If he didn't hear that, I'll rephrase it for him. Are you there, Craig?
Yes.
Oh, good. Well, I don't know what happened there.
Gremlin's got us.
I'm used to it. Okay. Let me do this and this and this, which is supposed to insure against that kind of baloney, and rephrase my question. Did you happen to hear it?
No, I didn't.
Okay, good. All right, so... after 9/11 occurred, I'm going to assume that our intelligence agencies understand and know the things that you have just explained to us, if they're true. They would certainly be aware of them, having interviewed terrorists themselves. They would understand these perhaps basic, what you consider to be basic truths. Therefore, what should our president have said after 9/11 when he gave his speech versus what he did say?
Well, had I been in his shoes, what I would have said is that the prayer requests that we discovered in the cars of the men who did this said that they were to scream Allahu Akbar as they were slitting the stewardess's throats and forcing their ways into the cabin. Allahu Akbar means Allah is greatest.
Mm-hmm.
So there is obviously a connection here between Allah and the deeds that are being perpetrated. And if I were him, I would have said, I do not at this point understand the full consequence of that connection. But obviously, understanding the motivation of those who want to kill us is more important than anything else in my job. And I'm going to find out what it is. And when I find out what it is, even if it's unpopular, I'm going to tell you the truth. And then together, we'll deal with this. That's what he should have said.
All right.
And then I think the American people would have been patient enough if the President of the United States had said, I'm going to read to you from these books, and I'm going to tell you why these guys are killing us. Now, that does not mean that we need to go out and hate Muslims. Absolutely the opposite. In fact, we need to love Muslims. We've got to love Muslims enough to free them from this.
Well, you've already qualified what you've said sufficiently, I think. I mean, if 95% understanding it in a very fundamentalist way would walk away from it, then you're not casting them all.
No.
But that's fine then.
I love Muslims.
Okay, so then still,
understand, with the understanding you now have, Craig, how would you have us, should you be president, deal with this threat? What should we be doing versus what we have done?
Well, the first thing that you would do is to understand the nature of the doctrine that causes men to behave so madly.
Let us assume that.
Okay.
And
let me give you a great example. In 1924, Adolf Hitler wrote Mein Kampf.
Yes.
In Mein Kampf, he said, I am establishing a religion. Most people don't know that, but Mein Kampf was written as a religion. Hitler was very upfront about it. And I'm going to use this religion to control my people and motivate them to martyrdom, so that they might terrorize all who oppose me,
mm-hmm.
and that I might conquer the world.
Mm-hmm.
Took him 1,000 pages to say it, but that's what he says over and over and over again in Mein Kampf. And yet, even though he wrote it in 1924, we appeased him all the way through 1938, giving him Czechoslovakia.
Mm-hmm.
6 months after we traded him land for peace, he started a war that led to the deaths of 55 million people.
Indeed.
And because we as a nation and we as free people didn't take the time to understand the doctrine that caused men to behave badly, that was the consequence.
Mm-hmm.
So it is far more important. We in America have this tendency to do what we have done in Afghanistan and Iraq.
But my question, though, is a strategic one,
yeah.
Craig. In other words, given your understanding and stipulating that what you say is true, based on that, then, what would you as president order to be done, either diplomatically or militarily? What would you order be done?
Yeah, the first thing is to correctly identify the enemy. That is huge. The second thing that I would do is to recognize that the largest wealth transfer in the history of the world is going from the United States and other Western nations to the specific kingdoms that are manufacturing terrorists. We send $1 billion.
And oil.
$1 billion a day for
the
black ooze.
Yeah.
That black ooze is being spent to build mosques and schools and media outlets that literally teach what I have read. Because you can't teach a different form of Islam, because that's the only one that's in the Quran. That's the only one that's in the Hadith. That's what they're teaching. In fact, I'll read out of the Quran the definition of jihad so that your audience is very clear. As
they hear the word jihad a lot. So go ahead.
Okay, let me read the definition right out of the Quran. It's 80% of the mosques in America, in fact, in the free world, are built by the Fahd family in Saudi Arabia. So this definition that I'm going to read is out of the Quran that the Fahd family not only translated, but is in all of the mosques in the Western world.
All right.
It says, al-jihad, holy fighting in Allah's cause. Doesn't say anything about a spiritual struggle. Holy fighting in Allah's cause with full force of numbers and weaponry. It is given the utmost importance in Islam and is one of its pillars upon which it stands. By jihad, Islam is established. Allah's word is made superior. His word means that none may be worshipped other than Allah. And his religion of Islam is propagated. By abandoning jihad, may Allah protect us from that, Islam is destroyed, and all Muslims fall into an inferior position. Their honor is lost, their lands are stolen, their rule and authority vanish.
Mm.
Jihad is an obligatory duty in Islam on every Muslim, and any Muslim who tries to escape this duty dies as a hypocrite.
Meaning, if a religious leader calls for a jihad, you are an immediate soldier, or else.
Yes, what the Prophet Muhammad said is that if any, this is a direct quote out of the Islamic Hadith or Sunnah, if any Islamic leader calls for jihad, you must go forth immediately.
So you're saying that then a call for jihad is like a declaration of war.
That is correct.
Okay. It could be called against other Islamics that have perhaps lost the path. It could be called
correct.
Against anybody or any nation or whatever, right?
Yeah, so what it has to be is it has to be in Allah's cause. Allah's cause is defined as two different things. One is subduing the disbelievers, the non-Muslims, and this is really the most frightening part if you are what you may want to call a Christmas and Easter Muslim, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Muslim that doesn't know your scriptures very well, or if you're a peace-loving person and happen to be a Muslim, is that Allah's greatest enemy, according to the Quran, is not us disbelieving infidels. It's peaceful Muslims. The Medina surahs, the last revealed, the last 24, are very explicit in describing the difference between a good Muslim and a bad Muslim from Allah's perspective. And he says that a bad Muslim is one who does not leave their home to fight jihad in his cause. He calls them a hypocrite. And he says they're the most vile of creatures, the worst of animals, and the hottest places in hell are reserved for the peaceful Muslims.
Well,
if you're a peaceful Muslim, your God doesn't like you very much.
Well, then I don't mean to be flippant, but then there are plenty of those around, so why aren't they going after them, and why are they coming after us?
They have been going after them. In fact, when they blew up the UN building in Iraq, that's what they were doing. When they went in and blew up the mosque in Iraq here a couple of days ago, that's what they were doing.
Gotcha.
So they do that to a great extent. In fact,
So they're fighting. Okay, so
that's what they primarily did.
Yeah, they're fighting on all fronts. Okay, I've got that.
Yes.
But I want to come. I'm going to keep coming back to this. If you were president, with all of this understanding, I want to know what you would do.
So I was talking about the oil money. The reason I'm talking about the oil money is Islam has always run on money.
Yeah, sure.
Always. And if we were to immediately stop the $1 billion a day that funds these manufacturing facilities, we would starve the machine to death. And there's only one way to do that. And unfortunately, it has to be done militarily because we've made too many bad choices as a nation, and we don't have the 10 to 20 years that it's going to take to wean ourselves off this dependence. And so we have to recognize that in the 1960s, 100% of the oil facilities that exist in the Islamic world were stolen from American citizens. They were all public companies owned by Americans. They were stolen. And the American government did nothing. If we as a nation, I know this doesn't sound nice.
Stolen
but if
as
we
in,
as a nation don't take those facilities back.
Yeah, and stolen as in nationalized.
That's stolen as in nationalized.
Yeah,
they were taken from American shareholders
mm-hmm.
without any compensation by, and when you say nationalized, it's a very different thing calling an Islamic country a nation versus calling France or England a nation. These are all countries that are the private property of the ruling thug,
mm-hmm.
whether they call themselves a prince or they call themselves president,
mm-hmm.
they're all warlords that are over these lines that have been drawn in the sand by the Brits, by the way, following World War I, when the Muslims fought their brethren, the Turks, and the Brits promised that they would reward the warlords that fought on their side with fiefdoms, and that's essentially how we got these countries.
So then you would have our military take back the oil.
I would. And what I would make certain is that 100% of the money for that oil goes to positive humanitarian things and that 0% of it goes to manufacture more terrorists. And if you were to do that, you'd have a profound impact on terrorism because literally it runs on money.
Well, then, are you proposing we invade Saudi Arabia, for example?
Well, invade is a very different thing when you're talking about oil facilities versus countries. What we did in Iraq, I believe, was totally wrong for 100 important reasons. And occupying a country is a very wrong thing to do. To take over and control the most important points of contact in terms of oil production and shipment is an extremely easy thing to do by comparison to trying to occupy a country. So I don't want us to occupy these countries. All I want us to do is to use our forces to surround the largest of the oil distribution facilities so that we can assure...
Well, yeah, but they're going to regard that as an act of war now.
Of course they are, but what are they going to do about it?
Well, I suppose more of what they're doing right now, blowing us up and killing us every day.
But the reason they're able to blow us up and kill us every day under the present scenario is that not only do they have the money and therefore the incentive, because one of the things that I learned when I talked to these terrorists and asked them why they were doing it, in addition to quoting from their scriptures,
yes,
they told me about the money. And the money is unbelievable. It's literally unreal what the families of suicide bombers get. It's millions.
Yes.
They're mercenaries. They're doing it for the money.
Yes.
And the same thing is true with all these jihadists that have gone into Iraq to take shots at our men. But the reason that we are so vulnerable there is we've got our men walking down the streets of Baghdad and other cities, and you might as well put a target on and say, shoot me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to surround a facility that's out in the middle of the desert versus trying to walk through the streets and to enter people's homes is a million-fold different in terms of vulnerability and difficulty.
All right, but I guarantee you, we're not going to go marching into Saudi Arabia and surround the oil fields and take them without a fight, or Syria, or I don't know, Iran, or anywhere you want to talk about.
Right. Now, unfortunately, we actually abandoned Saudi Arabia when the Fahd family would not allow us to use our bases in the largest.
Yes. Well, yes. If the truth were known, though, about where a lot of the money came from for the attack on 9/11 on those buildings and on the Pentagon, the truth is a lot of it came out of Saudi Arabia, but nobody wants to talk about that.
And it was directly from the Fahd family itself.
Yeah, but nobody wants to talk about that, do they? I notice that hardly even gets graced in the press around.
Well, you know, what's amazing is the 28 pages that came out of the report that we paid for as taxpayers, that was funded by Congress. On what really happened in 9/11, the 28 pages that explain that it was the Saudis was classified, and Americans can't even read it. That's what's on those 28 pages.
Well, then, let's see what you're saying about this war. I never did properly understand the reason for the war, because, well, we still don't have the weapons of mass destruction, but that aside, you'd have to prove that they intended to use them on us before I would think you'd risk American lives, so that couldn't be the reason.
Correct.
What could be the reason? Well, maybe you just stated it. You think we did the right thing and
no.
did it the wrong way or something?
No,
but we do have control of the oil fields there, right?
We do, and unfortunately, we are not redirecting the money intelligently. I think what we did in Iraq was totally wrong. In fact, a lot of the reason I wrote Tea with Terrorists is I was convinced that we would behave this way. In fact, everything that I predicted that would go wrong in Tea with Terrorists in Afghanistan, in Iraq, is going wrong. And I wanted to write a book and then speak out on why we shouldn't do this before we did it. You know, it's one thing to come out now and say we shouldn't be there because they're killing us and it's a Vietnam no-win scenario. It's an entirely different thing to explain the half a dozen reasons why this was a no-win game before we did it. And yes, I believe that we should not have gone. And it's not because I'm not pro-military. I think that the military is a very fine institution.
It is.
And I think there are places where it has to be used. But
I'm just not properly understanding your proposed course of action. I mean, you just couldn't go take those oil fields without a fight. So we're talking about war either way.
Well, the difference is monumental in terms of the cost and the consequence. But let's talk about what we did in Iraq, because we did not go in to take control of the oil wells in Iraq. We went in to liberate Iraq and allegedly to protect America from the clear and present danger of weapons of mass destruction.
All right, let's talk about that for a second.
Okay.
Well, was there a clear and present danger?
No. And by the way, all intelligence reports confirm that. Tenet, in his open addresses to the U.S. Senate, said that there is no chance that Saddam Hussein is going to use any of his weapons of mass destruction on the United States unless he is provoked and cornered by American troops invading his country.
And even when we did, he didn't.
Yes, and you know what was really the more important question than does he have them, was the fact that it was a lose-lose scenario. And you never enter lose-lose scenarios. If he had them and was willing to use them, he would have used them on our troops as we were in his backyard.
Absolutely.
And if he did that, we would have lost tens of thousands of our best young men and women. And Saddam Hussein's head is not worth that many men and women. And if he did not use them, then it proved absolutely that there was no chance he was going to use them on American soil. And so he was not a clear and present danger. That was untrue. And even if he was, we should not have gone there because the price for his head would have been too high.
Well, all right. Let's stop there. He was not a clear and present danger. And Iraq was not a clear and present danger. I absolutely buy into that. Now, we're still looking for the weapons of mass destruction. I don't think they've turned up yet. Actually, not one. I'm Art Bell from the high desert, where we hope it'll be drier soon. You're listening to Coast AM, in for the great George Norrie. Stay right where you are.
Sweet Jesus. Some of them want to
On the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Filling in for George, tonight's special guest host is Art Bell. To talk with Art, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. East of the Rockies, call 800-825-5033. And west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling the AT&T International Operator and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. Now, for George Norrie, special guest host, Art Bell.
That is the number lineup, everybody. They're a little different when I'm here, obviously. And I am Art Bell for George Norrie. Good evening. Craig Wynn is here. You know, the one thing I really would like to understand about this war is why we did it. And if there was no clear and present danger of those weapons being used against us, in fact, they might not even have them, we haven't found them yet, then if it wasn't a clear and present danger, what other reasons might we have for going to war? In other words, why did we do it? I'd really like to know the answer to that question. I have a feeling Craig will have it. We'll probe in a moment. Always seemed to me, if we were going to go after a nation because of weapons of mass destruction, then how come we're not attacking North Korea, huh? I mean, they're about to declare themselves a nuclear nation. They've been, I don't know how many bombs they have, but a bunch. Iran, gee, they might have some bombs. Syria's probably working on it. I mean, there's all kinds of nasty people around, lots of reasons to invade countries, if that's the reason. So that, it's like, that can't be the reason either. So it's not a clear and present danger. No weapons of mass destruction yet. Honestly, I want to understand why we had this war, Craig.
Well, Art, there are four reasons for using a nation's military. Three of them are just. One of them is not. We've talked about one of the just motivations. Can we talk about the other two just motivations before we talk about, in my opinion, why we actually went into Iraq, which is the fourth choice?
Sure. So it wasn't justified, huh? Okay. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, the first is clear and present danger. They were not a clear and present danger to the United States.
Got
Even
it.
If we find weapons of mass destruction, the fact they were not used when our troops were in their backyard
Got it.
Confirms that.
Right.
Second is a defense. If the Japanese attack us in Pearl Harbor,
well, sure.
It's a real smart thing for us to go and attack the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we were attacked on 9/11,
mm-hmm.
but that does not mean you go off and attack somebody who was not responsible for 9/11. Iraq was not responsible for 9/11.
Mm.
Okay, so that's the second reason. The third reason is something that we as a nation have a tendency to lose sight of and is the justification we're using here but incorrectly, which is there are times when a defenseless group of people are tyrannized to the point where millions are dying at the hands of some despot.
Well, you know, it happens all over the world. Look, it happened in Africa. It happened in Cambodia. We should have gone tropping into Cambodia if that's the case.
When we're dealing with, rather than tens of thousands, when the number reaches hundreds of thousands or millions, for example, Adolf Hitler opened Dachau within 2 weeks of the time that he was pronounced chancellor. when he started exterminating Jews, we should have sacrificed. That would have been an appropriate place to sacrifice American coin and blood to save millions of people. Pol Pot would have been the same thing in Cambodia and in the Sudan in the last 13 years. That is the most traditional, the most fundamental Islamic government in the world is in the Sudan. They've killed 2 million Christians in the last 13 years. Now, so there are examples of places to do that, but if you're going to do it in that scenario, two things have to be true. One is that since the world is full of these despots that kill their own citizens, you know, there's many of them, it has to be to rise above the level that now it's worth risking American lives. And second of all, you have to have the potential for a better outcome than you went in with. For example, we went into Somalia. Somalia, there were probably 400,000 Somalians that have died at the hands of the Islamic warlords there. But we had no chance of creating a better scenario, so the lives that we lost were lost in vain. The same thing is true.
Well, I'm not even sure that I agree with you on that last one. It's debatable. I'm not sure that any number of foreign suffering folk justify American military movements in blood and coin, as you put it. But let me go ahead and accept that for the sake of the discussion here. Why, in fact, did we go to war with Iraq?
Just so that I understand, in a situation where it reaches the Cambodian stage and we're dealing with millions.
Well, we didn't, though.
I know we didn't. Yeah. But would I believe that when it gets to the point we're talking about millions, like it is in the Sudan, like it was in Cambodia, like it was in Nazi Germany, at that point, boy, it's awful hard to justify not doing anything, allowing millions of people to die.
I know, and that's probably what the UN is for, if it's for anything. But again, that issue.
But you do that collectively. I mean, you do that as a world.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't do that as one nation.
That's right.
And you've got to go in a situation, even if you're going to do that, where the outcome is clearly going to be
superior. All correct, Craig.
But we did this
by ourselves.
We did.
More or less. I mean, we've mixed a few in, but we did it by ourselves.
We did it for the fourth reason, which is the only other reason that any nation ever goes to war.
And that would be?
Because it serves the politician's interest.
That's it?
That's it. Karl Rove, who I know, recognized that if he had a wartime president going into the congressional elections, he could take back the Senate. He did. I'm sorry, but that is the reason. That is the only other reason that any country sends in its troops. There's only four reasons, and the fourth is always bad. It's always political.
Yeah, well, of course you can never cite that.
That man had a very low rating as a president. It shot up to 90%. When I wrote Tea with Terrorists, his political rating was 90%, and I predicted, because I wrote Tea with Terrorists 3 years in advance. Now it's only a year and a half in advance, where I predicted everything that was going to happen, including that this war was going to go terribly wrong because it was being waged for the wrong reasons without any ideas to why we were being killed. And that as a result, this man would lose his midterm election.
Well,
America's not going to put up with this.
A war, of course, is a good thing for the economy. It is traditionally said. I didn't say that. Traditionally said that it is. I mean, industry cranks up. You have to make more missiles because you fire so many of them and all that. And so, you know, defense. Well, we did spend a lot of money for defense.
Yes, but unfortunately, the reason why this one is not is that the nation now is under the largest deficit spending in its entire history. It went from surpluses to huge deficits. While we can't ensure the power for 50 million Americans, we're spending $400 billion in Iraq. $400 billion in Iraq.
That's a lot of infrastructure. Yeah.
I want to tell you that's the size of the projected deficit. Spending money you don't have, or forcing the American taxpayers to spend money on a country that doesn't want us. I mean, they're marching in the streets at, you know, 200,000, 300,000, and 400,000 at a time.
No, I mean, you're quite right.
They don't want us there. Why are we spending $400 billion?
I definitely don't feel welcome there. And I don't think most of the listeners think that we're welcome there. We're not welcome there. It's obvious.
And you know what's interesting is yesterday the former Secretary of the Army was on a number of the network television shows, and he was talking about the reaction of George Bush and Cheney as to how this war would be fought, and that it would be very quick. We would liberate Iraq, and that the Iraqi people would throw flowers at the Americans and be so excited that we had liberated them that as soon as we had taken out the Ba'ath Party regime, that it would be over, we would be able to leave, and they would be ecstatic.
That was absolutely my impression.
Oh,
that we were going to go in and liberate it, then there'd be a little period of time, and then we'd say, here you go, have democracy or whatever you want, see you later.
That's the reason why I spent so much time talking about the fact that if you don't read the Mein Kampf of the Doctrine, you have no idea what you're getting into. Saddam Hussein doesn't motivate people to jihad. It's the doctrine that causes people to behave badly, and until you understand the nature of the doctrine, you will have no idea how the people will respond. We don't understand the motivation.
Now I know.
Until we understand the motivation, you can't predict what's going to happen. If you understand the motivation, you can predict what's going to happen.
Okay, now I notice we're building military bases in Iraq. There's every sign that we're going to stay there. What would your prediction be, that we're going to have to remain there indefinitely or what?
No, I think it's going to be exactly like Vietnam.
Exactly like Vietnam.
In Vietnam, we were in a game we could not win. By the way, we went into Vietnam. For those that think that the U.S. government just knows everything and just makes all the right calls and why aren't we swell, we went into Vietnam on a lie. The Gulf of Tonkin incident did not occur.
That's right.
That's how Congress approved Johnson sending in the troops. That did not occur. It was a lie.
That's right.
Just like it's a lie to say that that invading Iraq is a war on terrorism, because Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. Nothing. Al-Qaeda.
So you mean that was a lie that wasn't justified by the falling dominoes?
It was an absolute lie. As a matter of fact, Al-Qaeda wasn't directly responsible for 9/11. They were only indirectly responsible. 9/11 was conceived in the Al-Qaeda Mosque in Hamburg, Germany. That's where it was conceived, that's where it was staffed, and that's where it was financed. Al-Qaeda was only one of dozens of these fundamental Islamic organizations that took credit for it. So we did the wrong thing. In fact, when we went into Afghanistan to pound the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, we did the worst possible thing I could even imagine. We pushed the fundamentalist Islamicists. These are the people that really know their hadith and their Quran. Know it like I do, but unfortunately haven't rejected it. We pushed them out of Afghanistan into Pakistan, where they are stronger today by every account. In fact, you see it in the news every day. They're stronger today than they ever were, and Pakistan is the only Islamic nation that currently has the atomic bomb. They're a one assassin's bullet from having a fission bomb, and they'll use it. Talk about dumb.
Is it your view that they will use it on us and that will happen?
Yes. In fact, when I talk with the Mossad, they believe, as I do, that it's a 99% likelihood that the next 10 years an American city will suffer in what may be a million casualties as a result of one of three devices. In fact, I speak about all three of these devices in Tea with Terrorists so that America would understand the consequence of continuing to fund our own funeral. That's why I talked about these oil facilities.
Yeah, isn't a dirty bomb the most likely?
Well, the dirty bomb is the easiest, and we have misreported the nature of a dirty bomb. A dirty bomb is not going to be made with the barium, you know, like the stuff you use for enemas. It's going to have cobalt 60 and strontium 90 is what it's going to be comprised of. That's the daughter
product. Folks, you better listen very carefully to this, because he's right. The American public don't understand the implications of a real dirty bomb. Man, I have heard this played down in the American media as you wouldn't believe. When we were worried about it, not too long ago, really worried about it, they huffed and they puffed and they said, oh, a dirty bomb would kill, you know, to be very localized. It wouldn't be a real problem. Tell them the truth, Craig.
Okay, this will be shocking. They're going to use the daughter products of a nuclear reactor. That's the reason why Iran has 20 of them built by the French and the Russians. You've got to ask yourself a question. Why does a country that floats on oil and natural gas need atoms to boil water?
Mm-hmm.
That's all a nuclear reactor is a giant steam engine. And the reason is that the daughter products of those, the spent fuel rods, which are called daughter products, form two things that are extremely valuable to them. One is uranium-235, which can be then conditioned into the fuel for a fission bomb.
If you have the science.
Yes,
you
know. but the hardest part is not the science to make the bomb. It's getting the raw material to refine to make the fuel. That's the hard part. And when you have a nuclear reactor, that's the reason we wanted the nuclear reactors shut down in North Korea. That's the reason we have sent North Korea all of its oil and fuel for the last decade is we didn't want them to fire up those nuclear reactors because we know what the daughter products are. The second form of daughter products is these very lethal forms of nuclear material, and two of them in particular have very short half-lives. The shorter the half-life, the more lethal the material. Strontium-90, cobalt-60 are great examples. One has a 5-year half-life, the other is a 25-year half-life. If you were to take a coffee can size container of those two ingredients, which are very easy to come by, in fact, the United States alone has reported nearly 1,000 thefts just in the United States of this material.
Sure.
Just in the United States.
And you latch it on to conventional explosives.
All you do is, in fact, what I did so that America would understand it in Tiva Terrace, I said, if you were to take a sailboat and you were to float it into any one of America's 12 largest cities, all of America's 12 largest cities are on waterways, and you were to put it in the yacht harbor, and you were to take this coffee can-sized container, and you were to throw it up in the air with an RPG, of which, you know, they're a dime a dozen.
Sure.
And you were to throw it up in the air on the Hudson River in a coffee can-sized container, New York would be uninhabitable for a century. A million people would die.
That's a dirty bomb.
That's a dirty bomb.
And that's thrown up with a, you know, a rocket-propelled grenade device.
Right. Get it 200 feet in the air and let it explode. It's over.
Yeah, this is what Americans need to understand. Instead of listening to these people who say dirty bomb would be a terrible event, but not a really horrible event, they're wrong, aren't they?
They are wrong. They're talking about ingredients that are used in medical research, and that's not what they're going to use. They're going to use the daughter products of nuclear power plants, and they're not going to steal it, although it's easy to steal it from America. We've had 1,000 thefts in the last 5 years. They're going to steal it principally from the refineries in places like Iran.
Well, there was once a day in the world when you could say to yourself, nobody'd be crazy enough to do that because it'd be suicidal.
Yes, but
those,
you know,
days are long gone.
You know, Art, the reason that we had the nuclear standoff with the Russians, we called that MAD, didn't we? Mutually assured destruction.
That's right.
You know the reason that MAD worked? The
Russians
weren't.
Sure, because it really was.
The Russians weren't mad.
Well, that's
there, there wasn't. The Russians weren't. There was no part of communism that caused the Russians to say that if I die killing non-communists, I'm going to paradise to live with virgins.
Yes, correct. And by the way, maybe you can settle that for us. We once heard a number, a specific number, with regard to the virgins one would potentially acquire going as a martyr. What is that number?
Okay. The first of all, it's what's become a comic routine to talk about the 72 virgins.
Yeah, it is.
It is, but
correct?
No. It's not 72.
It would seem so wasteful.
The fact is that the Quran itself is the place where the virgins are described. In the Mecca surahs, Muhammad goes to great lengths to talk about how every martyr is going to get multiple virgins. He doesn't specify the number. Multiple virgins. They're perpetual virgins, by the way. They grow a new growth after they've been conquered. And that the rivers flow with wine. Now, it's kind of interesting. Why would the reward in paradise be what Islam prohibits on earth?
I'm going to have to consider the phrase perpetual virgin anyway. I mean, that just doesn't seem to work.
No, and these perpetual virgins are a special creation. They're not women from earth. In fact, according to Muhammad, he went to hell and he saw that most of the inhabitants of hell were women, and they were women because they complained.
Okay, well, anyway, suffice to say, there will be no shortage of martyrs or anybody throw the coffee can up or whatever. So the next thing is access. I mean, with the North Koreans and the Iranians and others having these sister products, as you pointed out, of nuclear plants, there's going to be no shortage of daughter products, whatever relative, of this stuff. it's going to kill a lot of people. And is it going to be possible for them to get that close without detection, or is the great homeland security that's going to, or has been created, going to protect us by detecting these nasty things as they come?
No, that's counterproductive. First, depending on the whether it's an alpha or beta wave, the radioactive nature of those isotopes can either be contained in a very thin wall of aluminum or in a fairly thick wall of lead
without detection.
Without detection. So if you were to take those two ingredients and surround them both by aluminum and lead, and rather than having the coffee can be normal coffee can thickness, you put it in the size of a 1 gallon pail, but, you know, constructed of the right aluminum and lead.
Mm-hmm.
there is no way it could be detected. None. We have zero way in the United States to detect it. And even if we did, there is no government agency that's going around every boat that enters America and every airplane that enters America and checking for these things. So,
why do you think it has not yet happened?
Well, I think that Homeland Security is actually counterproductive. What Homeland Security does is it changes the freedom equation in America, and it takes freedoms away from the victims of terror, and it creates the environment, the lack of freedom, in which terror thrives.
But isn't that always the trade-off, right? I mean, it's freedom for safety, right?
No. As a matter of fact, it should be exactly the opposite.
Well, I know, but
the
I'm
reason,
saying that's where
yes,
it is, though.
Yes, the reason that we have not had another Al-Qaeda-type, what's called an Al-Qaeda-type attack, but a fundamentalist Islamic suicide attack where they're yelling Allahu Akbar and flying planes at the building,
yes,
is it's very difficult for them to maintain the control, the indoctrination over the suicide bomber when they move them to a free society. The reason you see them in Israel all the time,
oh, sure,
and in Pakistan all the time, and in India all the time, and in Indonesia all the time, and in Russia, where they have so many Muslims all the time, is they're able to control the environment. They can't control the environment in America.
All right.
We're making the kind of environment in
Craig,
America that will make it easier for them.
All right, Craig, hold it right there. Maybe they have. Wonder why it hasn't happened yet. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell.
Seasons don't feel the reaper, nor do the wind, the sun, or the rain. We can be like they are. Come on, baby, don't feel the reaper. Better take my hand.
Worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Filling in for George, tonight's special guest host is Art Bell. To talk with Art, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. East of the Rockies, call 800-825-5033. And west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling the AT&T International Operator and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. Now, for George Norrie, special guest host, Art Bell.
It's a complicated, scary world we live in, isn't it? Craig Wynn is my guest, and we're talking about terrorists because he's talked to terrorists. He went right into their lair and literally interviewed them and knows some of the answers to some of the questions that I've wanted to know about. Why we went to war. Why we're occupying that country. What it is that many who believe in very fundamentalist Islamic principles believe about us that makes them want to dispatch us collectively. And what they'll do toward those goals. And I can't think of any issue in America right now more weighty than that. We'll get back to... by the way, we're going to open the phone lines this hour, and you can ask any sort of question you want related to all of this. Stay right where you are. Good morning. Kind of ominous sound, isn't it? Kind of fits, really, when you're talking about what we're talking about, and I don't know how in America you can not talk about it. Things certainly have changed, haven't they, from prior to the war to the war to now the aftermath of the war, in which I believe more Americans have been killed, by the way, now in the
period of time since combat has been called as was said to have halted. Now, I think we all know that terrorists of the type that you no doubt talk to in their lair are pouring into Iraq from all over the Middle East, probably from all over the world, I would think, as far away as Indonesia and, I suppose, the Philippines and, who knows, Afghanistan and wherever they are, they're making their way to Iraq now, aren't they?
By the tens of thousands, and they're coming from all of those countries, plus Jordan, Egypt, Saudi Arabia. In fact, the largest number of jihadists that we found in Afghanistan were actually from Kuwait, the country, of course, that we liberated. We're killing Americans. And literally from all over the Islamic world, they're coming for jihad because the only guaranteed way into this brothel that Allah speaks of in the Quran is to die a martyr killing infidels. That's the only guaranteed way in. By the way, so that we dissuade Muslims from doing so, Muhammad said that only 70,000 of his followers would be admitted into this paradise altogether. And there have been lots more than 70,000 Islamic martyrs. So paradise is full. Yeah, stop killing. Paradise is full. Not worth it.
So all you'd end up is in a big waiting line.
A big waiting line.
All right, look, I'm going to open up phone lines. I'm going to let some people ask you questions. All right,
sure.
Craig?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here they come. Well, wild card line, you're on the air with Craig Wynn. Good
Hello.
Morning.
Hello.
Hi
My
there.
Pleasure. Can you hear me?
Oh, just fine.
Okay. I just want to do a quick recap, if I may. I'll take as little time as possible. To explain to you why we're in Iraq, we need to go back to Operation Northwoods. Are you familiar with Operation Northwoods?
Correct.
No.
Yeah, you are?
I'm not familiar with
Operation. No.
Okay, Operation Northwoods was released by the Freedom of Information Act. It was during the Kennedy administration when Lemnitzer, who was the chief of, general staff, whatever, had this plan to create terrorism within America to blame on the Cubans. And it entailed, and you can get it, it's Freedom of Information.
To what
end?
Excuse me, dear, to what end? To create terrorism in America for what reason?
He was hijacking airplanes. He wanted to hijack airplanes to crash into buildings.
Yes.
To build fear amongst the Americans so that they would be frightened enough to invade Cuba, because Cuba was then the enemy. Kennedy vetoed that idea. They also wanted to sabotage John Glenn's orbit around the Earth. So that's Operation Northwoods. It was resurrected by the neocons, and the reason being that Iraq was so high on the agenda, first of all, they went into Afghanistan. Now, Karzai was with...
First-time callers, area code 775-727-1222.
Blow up here a little bit.
Okay, I just don't want to take too much time.
Right, I want you to do is to get to the core of what you're trying to say.
The core of this is that you asked your guest what speech would have been made. I have an idea for that, but not to take up too much time, I will just give you the facts that I have researched. And
right.
They are facts. They've been verified.
Yes, but nevertheless, my dear, why don't you, since we've got you... What would you, as president, have suggested we do versus what the president did?
In terms of when he faced the nation the first time?
That's correct, yes.
I would have stood in front of my American people, and I would have said, we have been dealt a very heavy blow, and we are grieving the loss of innocent people.
I think he did say that.
Well... My text that I have of it was a little bit more on a...
More or less.
Get those guys?
More or less he said that. Huh? What would you have recommended as a remedy is what I'm trying to get to here versus...
To admit the reason it happened. Now, to get back to what your guest was saying, Osama bin Laden was a member of the CIA. He's also very close to the Bush family. Salam.
All right. I'm going to hold it right there. All right. Let me, instead of listening to her go down the path, I could hear her going down.
Yes.
There are a lot of people who think that our government, in some conspiratorial manner, is tied up with these actual operations and somehow, in some way, secretly ordering these things to happen rather than trying to prevent them. They're actually behind them, I guess.
That's utter nonsense. I mean, the fact of the matter is that that if there was such a secret, it could not be held. Now, you are right, and you've brought this up, and the fact is that America has routinely manufactured its own enemies. Our State Department runs on Shin Tzu's philosophy of the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yes, yes.
Which, when you do that, you always lose the high moral ground, and you manufacture your next enemy. And so, yes, we have done some terrible things as it relates to the Mujahideen that became Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan when we thought they were fighting the Russians and we didn't like the Russians at that time.
Yes.
But to suggest that the United States is somehow involved in fundamentalist Islamic terror so that we train people to scream Allahu Akbar and fly planes into our buildings is utter nonsense.
Well,
that,
I mean, there are
that's
a
not
lot
their
of,
motivation.
But there are many people who believe that the government manufactures this in order to take away our precious freedoms. And you believe that basically is utter nonsense.
No, right? I've asked the terrorists themselves why they kill us, and I've spent 10,000 hours researching the scriptures that motivate them to kill, and no place do they say we follow the orders of the American CIA.
Appreciate that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Craig Wynn. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Michael in Norfolk, Virginia.
Hello, Michael.
I've been listening to Craig all night. I heard him the last time he was on this show with George Norrie.
Mm-hmm.
I recorded the program and listened to it maybe a half dozen times. And the reason I did is because I think he offers the best obfuscation of anybody I've ever seen in the world. I mean, he is so brilliant at leading us down the wrong path. It's very difficult to penetrate.
In what manner is he doing that?
It's very difficult to penetrate his argument. The problem is this. Religion is the bottom line. We need a world forum that will settle the issue of religion once and for all.
Well, yeah,
and
but wait, just one moment.
Yeah.
That's an interesting idea, which I have actually considered before. It really is an interesting idea. But when you have a religion which basically says all others not of our religion are not to be met with and accommodated but killed, now when you have one group with that sort of attitude, that prevents the kind of summit that you'd like to put on.
No, actually, I am convinced from my own contact with radical fundamentalists that you can entice them into a debate forum on the pride that they have in their God in a Elijah-type situation where he challenged the prophets of Baal. They will come to such a reasonable forum of debate and discussion to let the God who is God prove it and show that he is so.
But since when do you negotiate with infidels?
Well,
maybe you could point me to the Quran where it says that.
Well,
I can point you to the Quran where it says don't do that.
Yeah.
Well, look.
Well, that's important, caller. I mean, come on, that's important. You're suggesting something which I thought was interesting, but these people don't negotiate. They kill.
They do negotiate. I know friends who negotiate with them in this manner. Christian friends who do it this way. Women who will not even wear sleeves on their dresses for their own husbands in the United States will go into Palestine dressing the way their women dress in order to be able to make a statement for peace. For their Christian peace movement.
But what does that have to do with the price of tea in Palestine?
They embrace any gesture of moral and cultural acceptance.
Okay, fine. But you see, Craig admits that a good 90 or 95% would be of the persuasion you're discussing. We're talking about, a small percentage of fundamentalists who have, I will use the word interpreted the Quran in a way that suggests that infidels should simply be killed. Those are the folks that I'm talking about, caller.
Well, actually, the people, the 19 hijackers, when you read their diaries,
yes,
were more concerned about how our women dress than anything else.
Okay, well, all right. Thank you very much. How about that, Craig?
Yeah. Let me speak to several of those things. First is I am also an enemy of religion. I believe that religions are man-made constructs and that they do and encourage people to go off into war. And that said, Christianity, nor is Judaism, neither are religions. The fact of the matter is that the Quran orders Muslims to wipe the non-Muslims out to the last. Mm. And therefore, it is impossible to negotiate. Also, the greatest example in the Quran and what all Muslims use when they negotiate with non-Muslims is the Treaty of Hudaybiyah. That's where Muhammad went to Mecca 2 years before his death. He signed a 10-year peace treaty with them that said that I will not attack you. The following year, he came down with 10,000 troops and conquered the town. And so the Quran says that any treaty between a Muslim and a non-Muslim is not binding on the Muslim, and it sets the example that Muslims should use negotiations to weaken non-Muslims so that they can conquer them. That's the reality of Islam. Now,
it sure is reminiscent of the Cold War and what was said about communism, isn't it?
Yes. Now, also, one of the things that's interesting is the Quran orders Muslims not to engage in debate with non-Muslims. It tells them that if a person comes and is exposing the Quran, who is a non-Muslim, that they are to flee from them and take their families from them and not engage them in discussion, for if they engage them in discussion, they become one of them.
So the religious summit idea is a non-starter.
It's a non-starter.
Gotcha.
The only people that would participate in such a discussion would be what the Quran defines as the hypocrites, the peaceful Muslims, and they don't represent the drive, the control mechanism of the religion. It's kind of like a bad Nazi in World
fact,
War II.
The participants probably would have a jihad declared against them.
That is correct. They'd be killed.
Gotcha. West of the Rockies, you're
That's
on
why Anwar Sadat was killed.
Oh, with Craig Wynn. Hello.
West of the Rockies?
Yeah, it's you.
Yeah, Craig, last time I heard your interview, it was sobering and also courageous as to go through this. I have a couple quick points. I don't think that, I think you're kind of hard on George Bush. I don't think that he could have said anything about their religion without alienating the whole world and not allowing us to go in there in the first place.
He does have a point there.
Yes,
also, I don't think circling an oil field is going to help. It's going to also alienate the whole world, and make, especially whenever they're already part of the United Nations and considered a sovereign nation, not a private fiefdom or kingdom. And also,
Stop there. Okay. Let's take these one at a time.
But
we'll get to it. Don't worry.
Okay, great.
Take a deep breath. That one's really important because that was your suggested remedy for this, that we surround the oil fields
right.
and act as though we were still holding on to the lease and had a right to be there, right?
Right. Well, the I recognize that it would take tremendous courage on George Bush's part to expose the truth about the fundamentalists and the direct link between fundamental Islam and terrorism. But if you're going to commit hundreds of billion dollars of taxpayers' money and you're going to commit the lives of the best men and women in your country, you owe it to them to tell them the truth. And if you're not willing, you don't have the courage to tell them the truth, then don't go.
Then what a lot of people say, Craig, that it's all about oil?
Well,
they're right.
Well, it is, but it's all about oil for only one reason, not for the reasons they think. It's all about oil only to
because
keep
of the money.
Only to keep the oil money from manufacturing terrorists. Listen,
too far. You know, Saddam Hussein supported terrorists in Palestine. You said they're all part of the same group, okay?
Yes, he is.
I think they got problems. Obviously, they're not getting enough because they need to get it after they die. I mean, they could be re-educated somehow. Your solution, I appreciate it. It's not going to work, unfortunately, but I appreciate what you're doing. Thank you.
Yeah. By the way, I agree. It's not what I'm suggesting. America doesn't have the courage to do. But understand that what we put ourselves in is a situation that if we continue to send $1 billion over there a day, we are only paying for our own funeral. And so we have some very hard choices to make. And if we don't at least stop that $1 billion a day, then the future. The likelihood of America losing a major city is in the 99 percentile.
Well, and
so I think the consequences...
Move that up to an inevitability. In other words, because I, much as I like the gung-ho sound of your solution, it ain't going to happen.
Of course,
right?
It's not.
So then, okay, so the money will keep flowing. So
that's correct. And we're going to pay for our own funeral, and we're going to die. That's what's going to happen.
Okay. First time caller line, you're on the air with Craig Wynn. Hello. Hello there.
Yes.
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Revolving around what you said, Craig, most of it is true. There's a lot of half-truths, so not filled in. What you said about Adolf Hitler is correct. Most of the jihads, they have their books. Someone implanted wrong information for them to control the world. They're not stupid. You know, the Ottoman Empire is a continuation of Istanbul and Constantinople.
What did Craig say that you could just call it a half-truth? A lot of what he said was half-truth, you said.
There are a lot of things you're saying about the jihad. They're fanatical. All they dream about is a paradise.
Yeah?
You know, sending around money.
He said that.
Yeah, I agree.
Then how's it a half-truth?
Well, there's a lot of... Well, our eyes deceive our ears and our mouths, you know? There were three different divisions.
No, I don't know. You said he...
John Wayne. Listen to this. Otto Preminger and Sammy Davis Jr. were in my dreams tonight. They woke me up, you know, from the afterworld.
Well, all right. I think we're going to leave it right there.
I can't deal with that one.
Not exactly sure where he was headed, but...
I want to tell you, Art, this is really important. There's only five books that were written about Muhammad, who's Islam's lone prophet, and the creation of Islam within 250 years of the prophet's death. Only five books. Four of them are Sunnah, collections of hadith. The other one is the Quran. Everything that I have said comes directly out of those books, and that's what I want more than anything else. I want all of the peaceful, loving, wonderful Muslims in the world to read those books, and I want every American to read those books.
Well, if you said any half-truths, I'd like to know what they are. I don't think I've heard any I can identify that way yet. I appreciate anybody else who really thinks that's true and can actually name one. Otherwise, I defy you to suggest what Craig has said isn't so. Be right back.
Coast to coast,
and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Filling in for George, tonight's special guest host is Art Bell. To talk with Art, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. East of the Rockies, call 800-825-5033. And west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling the AT&T International Operator and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. Now, for George Norrie, special guest host, Art Bell.
I think all of this tonight boils down to the most important thing he told us tonight, which was that if this percentage of Islamics believes, as we have discussed this day, then the future, and one of our cities or more, is inevitable. Absolutely inevitable, particularly given the only course we could follow to stop that. At least I think that's what I'm getting out of this. My guest is Craig Wynn. If you have questions for him, you're welcome to ask, and that's done via the telephone. We'll be right back. Craig Wynn, my guest, a very controversial point of view, a very controversial point of view, and one you will not hear generally in the American media. Now, I want to reiterate, for those of you that are getting your pants all in a bunch out there, he's not suggesting that all of Islam is this way. In fact, quite the contrary, he said about 95%. If they read the Quran and other religious texts the way the 5% who buy them straight down the line or in the manner those people do did, they would simply walk away from Islam. Now, that may or may not be so, and that's certainly the crux of the controversy this morning. It's a pretty harsh truth you're listening to, if, you know, if it is true. So I would hope some of you would have questions along those lines. Craig, you still there?
I sure am. You know, the after I wrote Tea with Terrorists, which almost everything that I predicted would happen has happened, so many of the readers of Tea with Terrorists wrote me and say, you know, great explanation of what's going wrong here in America in this war on terrorism. But those five books that you talk about, they're hard to buy. They're hard to understand. Could you write something that, that takes the scriptures from those five books, puts them together in a way that we might understand what this doctrine actually says about itself?
Makes sense, yeah.
And so I wrote a book called Prophet of Doom that I'll release here in probably another 4 or 5 weeks. It's in its final editing stage right now, that takes these four books of Sunnah, these collections of hadith, and puts them together with the Quran, reorders the Quran so it's in chronological order, infuses it with the context that it otherwise lacks, and explains it just like the first translators of Mein Kampf said, here's what Hitler has to say, but every time he said something that was untrue, it held Hitler accountable. So I've actually taken all of these scriptures and put them together in one book.
There was another guy who did something just like this, you know, and he got put on a list, a hit list, actually. Aren't you all concerned about that?
Well, that was Salman Rushdie. What Salman Rushdie wrote was Satanic Verses. Now, Satanic Verses happens to be a very important part of the Islamic Hadith. Oh. Hadith speaks about Satanic Verses. It speaks about Muhammad giving a Quran verse that was from Satan. And the Quran itself speaks about the Satanic Verses. The reason that that they put the fatwa on him was twofold. One is Muslims don't want the truth about their scriptures exposed because, as I've said, if people actually read the truth about what Muhammad did and said as it's recorded in their scripture, there wouldn't be any Muslims left.
Well,
but
my point was
a Muslim, and so they Muslims are ordered in the Quran that any Muslim who rejects his faith must be killed.
Well, so why aren't you worried?
I'm not a Muslim.
Well, we all know they're going after both Muslim and non-Muslim
alike. Well, you know, the bottom line is what I'm doing, I recognize, puts my life at risk.
Exactly.
However, I am absolutely willing to lay down my life if I can save millions. And those millions include Muslims.
You're sure it's that grave?
Oh, I'm positive. In fact, You are an extremely enlightened man. In fact, if there were more people with the levers of public opinion like yourself who were willing to engage in a discussion on this, the single most important issue of our day, the issue that's ultimately going to destroy America, then we could prevail. But because we won't, I am one of the few voices willing to expose Islam. I will gladly lay down my life to make Americans and Muslims alike aware of the truth so that we might save some from this hellish future.
Well, let's see who Sammy Davis shook awake now. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
All right.
Yes.
Welcome back.
Well, thank you.
We've missed you.
Thank you.
And wouldn't you know, you'd have a wonderful program on tonight. And I just want to congratulate this Mr. Nguyen. What was the name of his book again that's going to be coming out?
Oh, Prophet of Doom is the book I've written after Tea with Terrorists. Tea with Terrorists is a voyage of discovery that takes you right through the meetings I had with Al-Qaeda and the like, and takes you through the voyage of discovery, literally, that I went on, in a novel form, so that there's a story that takes you right through the learning experience, if you will. And okay. Prophet of Doom is quite a tome. It's all five of the Islamic holy books put together with a running commentary.
Wonderful. Well, I wanted to say a friend of mine is reading a book called Treason, and I think you probably know about that one.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's very Ann Coulter, is it?
Yes.
Yeah. But what I'm concerned about is I think the press is very controlled. I know we're not getting the news correctly.
Yeah, it's not actually controlled, but the press all belongs to, they share a common sense that's part of this religion of political incorrectness, if you will.
Right,
and
exactly.
Because if you step an inch outside of the circle of political correctness, you are publicly ostracized, kicked, raped by all these tolerant practitioners of political correctness. You become yesterday's news.
Uh-huh.
If you are in the mainstream media and you step outside of their circle. And so it's not so much a conspiracy or an organ. It's just if you want to prevail in the mainstream media, you got to play by their rules.
Okay, well, you haven't just stepped out of it. You've taken a giant leap.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't have an axe to grind. I didn't have any motivation here. I got nothing to gain. I'm just an average guy.
No, but you do have a lot to lose. I mean,
I have a lot to lose. I have nothing to gain. Actually, I have nothing to lose. What can they do? They can take my life.
Yes.
And if they take my life, they're going to hurry me on to heaven. I am. He is no fool that gives that which he cannot hope to keep to gain that which he can never lose.
So you do believe in heaven then?
Yes. I work for Yahweh. Yahweh is the God of the Bible. I went on this mission because he asked me to. I volunteered because he asked me. It would have taken more courage not to go than to go.
Well, now that must be a story in itself.
Yeah, I have no preconceived notions when I went over. I went over to find the truth. And when I came back to report the truth. And all I want to do is to save my country from Islamic terror. And the best way to do that, by the way, is to save Muslims from Islam.
Craig, why should we not imagine that you were predisposed because of your own religious point of view?
Well, certainly, first, I'm not religious at all. I have a relationship with the Creator. That's really all that...
Whatever it is.
Yeah, all that Christianity really is.
Yeah, that's fine.
In Tea with Terrorists, and again in Prophet of Doom, I don't ever say... This is my opinion because I think this. All I do is I read and report what their scriptures say, what the terrorists themselves say. And so you can make up your own mind. So I'm not sharing with you my interpretation. I'm not sharing with you my view. I'm sharing with you
what
their scriptures say.
Yeah, good enough. And what they said. All right. Wild card line, you're on the air with Craig Nguyen. Good morning.
Hi, Art. Hi, Craig.
Hi.
Would we both, all three of us, agree that the most accurate book of prophecy would be the Bible?
Absolutely.
Okay. And the Muslims do believe in Christ, and that he will
return. No. You've got to be really careful there.
I'm not even sure.
They believe that Christ was a great...
Hold on, ma'am. I want to specify one thing. Ma'am, listen to me. I don't know if I agree with that, so please don't include me, but proceed with the conversation.
All right. All right, I'm just saying that the Quran, they have a belief in Christ, that Christ was a great prophet, and that he will return.
Yes.
But he was no more special, but yet he's the only one who returns. All
no,
right.
He doesn't. They don't believe he's going to return.
Okay.
They believe
a friend of mine did tell me that he will return.
No, they have Christ. He's first. They Islamicize him. They Christ is destroyed in the Quran. Literally destroy him. And they destroy the Gospels. They destroy his message. They say he was not crucified, and yet they say he was resurrected. It's the most odd thing in the world. And they say that, that Christ himself has devised a plot against all of those who called him the Messiah, and that he will personally judge and punish all of those who called him the Messiah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
But I do find the Quran very hypocritical because they say that they follow Christ's teachings, but yet...
No, they don't. There's not a single one of Christ's teachings in the Quran. Not
a
single one of his teachings is in the Quran. Not one.
The Bible itself says that there's going to be a false prophet in the end days that will turn one-third of the heads on the earth.
And there are many who could compare some general principles and morals dispensed in the Bible and the Quran and find similarities.
Actually, what happens is that that about two-thirds of the Quran is based upon a twisted version of the Talmud, particularly the Talmud as it does a commentary on the Torah. And Muhammad had these scriptures read to him, the Quran says, by Jews. He paid the Jews for them. He twisted them to serve his interests. And so many of the stories, although they're twisted, are common, although beyond the fact that there's common characters, there is nothing, in terms of the moral lessons, there is nothing in common. The God of the Quran and the God of the Bible are polar opposites.
Mm-hmm. So you're no friend of religion, huh?
No, I'm no friend of religion. I think religion has done a lot to harm man. But you know, for the atheists listening out there, the religions of man, communism, has killed more people in the last 100 years than any of the false religions have. I believe that the Bible the word of Yahweh, and I do think it is a prophetic book. As a matter of fact, the Bible itself predicts that all of the Islamic nations are going to join together, and they're going to wage war against Israel in the last days, and that as a result of that war, 5 out of every 6 Muslims are going to die, and another totally one quarter of the Earth's population is wiped out in that war.
You think all of this prophecy is accurate?
You know, the Bible's gotten the first 2,000 prophecies that it's made precisely accurate, and it's got another 500 to go that speak of these last days. I certainly wouldn't bet against it.
Well, according to what you said tonight, both publications would seem to agree with regard to the end, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Actually, you know, what's interesting is that the Quran itself talks about the Gog and Magog War, which is the World War III that's discussed in the Bible, that follows a land for peace treaty with Israel, where the Islamic nations then, following that treaty, they use it like Hudabaya, and they come in and attack Israel. The Quran itself has references this Gog and Magog war. So both books predict what's called the Day of Doom, but one is based, as I say, on the other.
Maybe they're both right. All right, East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Craig Wynn. Good morning. Hello. Going once. Going twice.
I can hear him, Art.
Are you there?
Yes, I can hear him, Art.
Oh, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
okay.
I've got you.
Greg,
yes.
You or Dr. Bob Mulray said that $1 billion would be spent out of Saudi Arabia and the United States to spread the Muslim religion, and this is two ways, by building mosques and educating prisoners and United States prisoners to be disciples. And if that is the case, how will the millions of illegal immigrants in the United States play a role in terrorizing the United States? And what role are they doing in federal penitentiaries? Is it the militant Muslims that they're educating, or which branch?
Well, 80% of the mosques in America are funded by and staffed by the Fahd family foundations, which the Quran that I read from on jihad is a quotation out of that. The reason they go into to prisons is they find a very ideal audience. The Quran says that booty is lawful and good, and it says that killing non-Muslims is good. And so if thievery is good and killing is good, and you get babes in paradise if you die, and you get to keep the booty if you live, you know, Islam's a pretty seductive religion if you're going into a prison.
What about the millions of illegal immigrants? And when these guys get out of penitentiary, what kind of threat do they pose to us?
Fairly significant. But it's my view that the majority of the problem we'll face from the fundamentalists is not in America, because in America it's really hard to maintain that level of hatred and indoctrination. And so I think that what you'll see is that there'll be situations where a cell of guys come in like they did in 9/11, and they will, this next time I think they'll come in either with a biological weapon, a thermonuclear device, or a radiological dispersion device, and you'll see very few people kill a lot of people in a grand act of martyrdom.
No, what is this fourth political reason you mentioned? My radio faded out a while ago. The main reason we went, the political reason.
It was a real reason we went, number four. You want to reiterate, Craig?
Yes, the fourth reason that any country goes to war is because it serves the politician's interest. And in this particular case, being a wartime president made George Bush very popular. He took his approval ratings up to 90%, and Karl Rove knew that he could regain control of the Senate if he had a wartime president, and he did exactly that.
All right. I want to give you a chance, because we're at the end of the program, to go ahead and, you know, if somebody were to start out with Craig Wynn, fascinated by what they heard tonight, wanting to know the truth, willing to read one of your books, which one ought to be first?
Well, I would read Tea with Terrorists, because the most pressing issue is this threat that we face as a nation and as a world. And they can buy Tea with Terrorists at Amazon.com. It'd probably be the best place to go. And if they wish to contact me, they can contact me at www.teawithterrorists.com. There's a lot on the book there. I think In the Company of Good and Evil would be an interesting read if people want to understand what's going wrong with corporate America. And Prophet of Doom won't be out for another probably 6 weeks. But when it is, that's for people who are very serious, who are willing to sit down and say, I'm not going to trivialize this thing. I want to know everything. I want to know everything their scriptures say, from creation all the way through terror. I want it put in order. I want all five books brought together. I really want to understand what this doctrine itself teaches. And that'll be Prophet of Doom when it's out here in about 6 weeks.
And that's what that book will do for people. It's reasonable without studying all of those texts.
What I did is I wrote it so that
it is
if you knew
objective.
Nothing,
it is. Is it an? Would you declare it an objective presentation?
Half of the book is their scriptures, and I don't just footnote their scriptures. I say this is from Al-Tabati. This is from Bukhari. This is the Quran. I give you the page number that it comes from in each of these five books, and then I put their quotation in a bold text. So you get to read their quotation. And then to make it easier for folks, I do a running commentary, but I do mine in a different font so you can distinguish between them, that tries to walk the reader through this like we were just having a conversation on the radio.
That's
the role the narrator plays.
I got you. Craig, thank you for being here.
Oh, man, I'm so happy that you're back. And thank you for caring enough to expose this issue.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, Art.
All right, that should give you a lot to think about. Craig Wynn. Tomorrow night, we're going to do open lines. Now, I'm open to anything you want to talk about, anything at all. In fact, I'm so open to suggestions that I'm suggesting you email me with your idea. I wanted to get this show done tonight because I felt very strongly about it. I don't know if everything you just heard is, pardon the phrase, gospel or not, but it should make you think. I suppose that's what we're here for. We'll do some more of that tomorrow night. Well, first hour, we will have a guest, by the way, on crop circles, and a crop circle that may have been hidden by a government. There's a lot to be said about that. Maybe we'll talk about crop circles tomorrow night. Whatever it is, I'm Art Bell at mindspring.com or artbell@aol.com. Good night.